with Rebecca Hargraves and Devin Stack.
Hey!
We made another show happen. Can you believe it?
Welcome back to another fun episode of Outlaws. Probably the last one we're going to be doing at noon, but it is at noon.
We should tell people why we're changing the time, because it makes us look like considerate right-wing folk, honest right-wing folk. We don't want to compete with Mark Collette. He's had this time slot for a long time. We don't want to take his viewers, so we are going to be changing to a later time. It has nothing to do with the lag in donations.
Well, I just think it's better later in the evening when people are off. People were saying that when we were first talking about doing it later, when people were off work. So, and I think, you know, it is kind of weird, a weird time slot, unless we were just talking to housewives, I guess. That this would be this is like the housewife slot. So maybe that's why you wanted it so much.
This was your idea, buddy.
Okay, it kind of was. But
before we get started, I'm Rebecca Hargraves. This is Devin Stack. Before we get started, I don't know if you want to save this for Saturday, but can we get a little churro update?
Oh yeah, churro's fresh out of the hospital. I had to take him to the pet hospital. I had to chop down a small tree to get to him. He hobbled into some bush, a very spiky bush, surrounded by cactus. It's like his little spot when he's out there. I was a little worried because he slept all night, and then he hobbled outside and started sleeping in his bush, and been like a few hours, and I'm like, all right, what are you doing? So I tried talking to him in the bush, and he wasn't responding, and so I reached my arm all the way into, like, I got so many cuts on my arm doing this, and I was petting him, and he was like responding to that. I was like, okay, well, he's not mad at me because he seems to like that I'm petting him. He's not mad that I found him.
Did you think he was just in a bad mood?
Well, he ignores. It's a cat, you know. Cats will ignore you sometimes, but he was not. He didn't look like he was ignoring me. He looked like he just couldn't. He couldn't. He couldn't get, you know, do anything. And I was like, okay, this is bad. So I couldn't get to him, and I chopped down a tree so I could get in there, and reached in there, scooped him up, and scooped him into the car or little cat carrier thing, and the vets were like, there's no vet nearby me, so the closest one is like 100 miles away, and they were full, so I had to drive further than that to a emergency deal, and they gave him a bunch of ketamine and shaved him and drained the abscesses in his arms, or, you know, front legs, and his head and his tail, and doped him up with antibiotics. And the vet said that he got kind of spicy with her, so he wasn't he wasn't totally out of, like, you know, he wasn't like at death's door or anything like that, but if I'd waited a couple more days, it probably wouldn't have been great. And, you know, having just lost...
Ketamine. Devin sent me this picture of Churro, like, clearly just tripping out. He's just like, whoa, what's going on?
Like the biggest pupils ever. Yeah. He's all fixed up now. They literally, it really is ketamine. That's not a joke. They doped up on ketamine and said that, you know, he's going to be kind of acting drunk for a couple of days. And I was like, all right, cool. So he's behind me. He's been, he's passed out. He's been like that since I brought him back last night.
And, is there a greater internet cat lore than Churro?
Yeah, he doesn't even know it. That's the funniest thing, is he has no concept.
You don't pet him and tell him that he's famous?
No, I don't pet him at all.
Churro, that Nazis love you.
He doesn't like to be touched. No, just kidding.
Stupid cats. God.
No, he's a cuddly little guy, but he's recovering. He looks all stupid because they shaved a bunch of his head and his arms and part of his tail, so he looks all retarded. But he seems happy right now. So, yep, Churro is Churro is back. I was a little stressed out by that whole ordeal, but
yeah,
he was cool in the car. Now, the other thing I was worried about, like, because cats hate going in cars.
Yeah. You
know, but he was so fucked up. He was just like, whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Like he growled and scratched at me for like a second when I was shoving him in the car carrier, and he was just like, I'm out of energy. So it was over with pretty quick. So
on that note, do you want to talk about a pedophile serial killer?
Oh yeah, that's a good segue. That's a good segue. Well, it's funny because so Rebecca came up with a story that she thought might challenge some of my previous notions, and actually some of our previous notions on a previous stream talking about, well, the genetic origin of behavior, and also the institutionalization or deinstitutionalization that I recently just streamed on Insomnia stream. But as peeled back the onion, not so much.
No, I was so excited. I was like, I'm going to get Devin to develop this nuanced perspective on this issue when we're going to have to confront things that, no, none of that, no.
Well, and I was prepared to do it. I'll tell you what, when I first looked at the story, I was like, oh, great. I just talked about how we need to get rid of institutions and how you know, behavior is genetic. And now I gotta look at this here. And then as soon as I looked a little bit, I was like, oh, okay, never mind. This is, why would I doubt myself?
Good thing you called me this morning, because I was going to say a whole bunch of stupid shit. Thank goodness. Well, Devin wins again.
Well, let's tell the story. The story is, let me do a little wipe here. Well, actually, first I have to get rid of the Outlaws open, or it'll play again when we go back. All right, we got this guy, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about this story of this guy, Gordon. What is it, Gordon?
It's Northcott, but it's spelled like I'm seeing North Scott in a lot of places, but it is Northcott.
Northcott. Dirty, filthy Canadian. Filthy, disgusting Canadian.
I know. I was like, is there, I'm asking Grok, I'm like, is there a Jew angle to this story?
Well, there kind of is.
Canadian.
No, there kind of is at the end. There kind of is a little bit. We'll talk about that. Very little, tiny bit. But so this guy was born in Canada.
Boo.
Yeah. way back in 1906 in Saskatchewan. And his mother, as you can see here, this is a photo of him age 3. She used to dress him up like a girl.
Yeah.
Kind of nice.
Nothing
weird about that. And this is the kind of thing where this is what I was talking about with the behavior. Is it genetic, or are there things that are influencing you? Because obviously this guy is going to end up being a creep, right? Or we wouldn't be talking about him. And so people will say, actually, I've noticed in looking up this story, people don't even bring this part up anymore. You know, it used to be something that was brought up all the time, you know, whether you're talking about fictional characters, like in Silence of the Lambs, like, oh, look, trannies are these psycho murderer people. But now they whitewash that. They like, I think I listened to like 4 different podcasts about this case, and they didn't even bring this part of the story up. That they used to dress him up like a woman.
That's convenient.
Yeah. So the mom would dress him up like a girl up until, and he would, and have him play with dolls up until he was a teenager. And I think it might have something to do with the fact that his mother looks like a man.
She really does.
Yeah. I mean, like, even when she was young, this is her when she's young, and when she's older, she really looks like a man. But even when she's young, because I was like, well, maybe she just aged really poorly, you know? But no, she just always looked like a man. And, but we'll get to that here in a second. But the idea that, you know, she made him play with dolls and she treated him like a woman, and that's what made him crazy. the thing that you need to think about is her behavior in doing that, which, by the way, it goes far beyond just dressing up as her son as a little girl and having him play with dolls. There's more psychotic genetically driven psychotic behavior that will come from her as we tell right. the story here.
Well, she also had lost a child before him.
Well, yeah. Well, she was a total nutcase, and she obsessed about him. But all that genetically driven behavior of hers obviously was inherited, and he inherited a lot of these psychotic behaviors that she will. Again, like I said, it'll get more extreme. There she is, looking more like a man. I mean, holy shit! She just looks like a dude. Like
how does that happen?
Like, it's to the point where I started looking to see if maybe she was a dude.
Yeah. Seriously, it just looks like a man wearing a wig. Just not trying. If I saw that person walking around, I'd be like, that tranny needs to put in more effort.
Well, you know what? That's what trannies have really done a disservice to ugly women. Because how many ugly women do you think go around now and everyone thinks they're a dude?
Yeah.
Because it used to just be like, oh, that's unfortunate. And in fact, it'd almost have the opposite effect of, instead of acting grossed out and weirded out by the ugly woman that looks like a man, you'd probably be extra nice to her because you're like, oh, your life isn't easy, you know? But now it's like, is that a dude? So now, if you're an ugly woman, your life is just pure hell, no matter how you look at it. No one's nice to you.
Or incredibly tall.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Rough.
Well, what if you get both? You're like just this really tall, mannish looking woman. It's all over for you.
Yep.
So anyway, so she's they live in Canada for a while, and they do this little relationship where she's dressing him up like a girl and having him play with dolls, and they decide to, and we'll talk about why later. They decide to go to Los Angeles in the 1920s.
Which part is, of the reason that they moved to LA is that he was a flamboyant dresser, and the way he talked apparently was very faggy, although I couldn't get any audio on it. And they wanted to move somewhere where he would fit in better. So they moved to the faggot land of degenerates, Los Angeles.
Well, and this is the Roaring Twenties too. So a lot of people, we were getting a lot of immigrants, obviously from around the turn of the century, but around the 1920s, during the Roaring Twenties, this was like, oh yeah, the streets are paved with gold, and a lot of just degenerate people were kind of moving out to California because it was basically the very edge of Western society. So they moved there in 1924, and this is when he's about 17 or 18 years old. And then when he turns about 1920, he persuades his father to buy him a chicken farm, which is a little weird. Like, hey, Dad, you want to buy me a chicken farm?
No experience with farming, no experience with chickens. And this was a really remote area at the time. I think they had like a 100-acre farm. It would get 110 degrees during the day. It was really desolate and depressing. There were no structures on the land. And his parents were like, that's weird, but okay. And then they just did it.
Yeah. So you're going to have chickens out there in the middle of nowhere, are you? Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. And then, so after he built this chicken farm in the middle of nowhere, he decided he couldn't run it himself. He had to get some help. So he got his cousin, who was also Canadian, to come move in with him and help run the farm. Or at least that's what he told his cousin Sanford Clark here. That's what he told his mother. But in reality, would you like to do the honors?
Yeah, thank you. Nothing else happens. That is the end of this story, and we're going to conclude the stream now.
I wish.
He just came on, and he was a good little farmhand, and there was nothing abusive going on in the relationship. No, he brings him out there. He immediately starts raping and beating the shit out of him. He makes him sleep in the chicken coop. He sodomizes with him with a broom and other objects. This kid was just totally horribly abused in every way that you could possibly imagine, especially psychologically. There was a story where Gordon unlocked the door to the chicken coop to see if he would escape. And because Sanford was so malnourished, he had lost all of his hair because he was so malnourished. He just collapsed at the edge of the property and went back in to the house and collapsed on the sofa. And then he woke up to Gordon pouring boiling water all over his genitals because he knew that he had tried to escape.
So not exactly a happy home life for Sanford here. But yeah, this goes on for years. Gordon also would force him to write letters back home to his mother and sister in Canada that would say, you know, oh, I love it here at the getting raped. I mean, really fun time farm. Where all I do is get raped by my, I mean, have fun with my uncle and I'm going
and
to
the
school
chickens.
And the chickens. Well, there are cocks involved, but not in the way that you would think in a chicken farm, Mom. And so he's writing these letters and they sound a little weird to the sister who's,
but the mom is wildly negligent. She doesn't care. Although it was a pretty normal practice in the 20s to send people off to do labor. Sanford was 14 when he got sent. He was there for, I think, 2 years. She still was like, there was a real lack of curiosity about where he was going, the quality of the people he was with, what he was doing. But the sister, she was on to something. She was worried almost immediately.
Right. She should have been, because like he was writing in the letters, he was saying, oh, I'm going to school, but his spelling, you know, even though years would go by, like his spelling, his handwriting, like it still looked like a child's after, you know, years of that going on. So after a couple of years of him getting raped repeatedly, abused, tortured, and the way it's described and the way that it was described to authorities, obviously, after this was it gets worse, but this and the other things were uncovered. It was basically like he'd been broken. He'd been mentally broken and just become kind of like a slave to his uncle Gordon at a certain point. It also it became an issue for Gordon, who was into little boys, as Sanford began to grow up and he lost his attraction to Sanford. And so he, in order to, I guess, feed his evil appetites, decided to go out elsewhere for that. And one day he came back to the farm and called Sanford over to the trunk of the car. And he was very excited. His uncle Gordon was really happy and joking around. He was like, you got to see this. You got to see this. And Sanford, who wasn't used to seeing his uncle in a good mood unless something horrifying was happening, was a little nervous about what was going to be in the trunk of the car. And he looked in the trunk of the car, and sure enough, in the trunk of the car, he should have been worried, because there was a
headless Mexican?
Oh, well, a Mexican head. Getting close. The severed head of a Mexican.
Right, right.
And later, we would find out that the severed head of the Mexican was because he had tortured and killed a Mexican youth and thrown the headless torso out at the side of the road, where it was discovered by a rancher.
Yeah. He actually told his mom about this. He claimed it was some kind of self-defense killing, and she was like, I'm proud of you, son.
Yeah. That's the best. Well, yeah, best. It's gallows humor here. We always have to find what can be funny about this, even though this is horrifying.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the other funny thing is in the reporting, they call it, it's the headless Mexican. So that was known as the case of the headless Mexican for a long time.
Oof.
The other thing I found odd, too, in some of the original newspaper reporting about it, they mentioned that it was a Mexican of higher class.
Like, how could they know that? Was it just his skin color?
Probably. Like, no, I really think it was. I think it was like, you know, this is back in the based 1920s in terms of white people racially being based. And so they probably did pull out the, like, the cards, and, you know, with the different shades on them. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely not white, but this is one of them high-class fancy Mexicans that's kind of, you know, slightly white a little bit. Like, in fact,
I think he was found, the body was found nude. So it's not like they were looking at his clothes and they were like, oh, this is a high-class Mexican. It was probably entirely based on skin color.
This might even have it here. Oh, yeah, here it is. The body was that of a well-formed youth, evidently of higher class of Mexicans.
The mestizos.
So, there you go. All right. So the authorities were baffled. They didn't know what to do with this. Oh, another weird thing was this was not the only headless body found in this area in 1928. Because I was looking for this story and I found another one. And I was like, what's going on out there?
Good Lord.
And people just getting decapitated in 1928 in California. So they don't know what to do with this body. They have no idea. They have no clues. The only clues they had were some footprints, some tire tracks. But, you know, the forensic evidence didn't exist really at all back then. They didn't have DNA testing or really anything. And they didn't have any missing reports of a Mexican. So they didn't know what to do with the body. And the case just kind of, you know, went unsolved. Later, this would not be enough, though. This would not be enough for, we should say, to just elaborate a little bit. When he told his mother, Sanford thought, oh, well, this is going to be good, because his mother visits and they're having dinner. And he's like, this is going to be good. I can tell the mom that the Uncle Gordon, you know, in addition to raping me all the time, which apparently she doesn't care about, or maybe he just didn't want to tell her about, but he's a murderer. And so I can tell her that he's murdered someone, and I can get out of this situation where I'm trapped with creepy Uncle Gordon. And his hopes were dashed when, before he could tell her, he told her and was like, yeah, I killed this Mexican boy and out of self-defense, and I decapitated him. She's like, that's very smart of you. Yeah, always decapitate the people you kill in self-defense and throw their bodies at the side of the road. That's that way, that'll always work out for you. And so he said, Sanford said, in that moment he realized that the mother would not be an ally, and he, you know, no matter what he told her, she wouldn't believe it, because she was obsessed with her son, and in a very creepy way, and would never put guilt on him for, you know, anything, which is a shame, because it might have prevented what would happen next.
Oof, man. There, and this is the story that was in the movie Changelings, which was not a good film, and it's filled with misinformation and feminist propaganda, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Ah, this is the murderer. I thought you were going to pull up a different picture.
Oh, yeah. No, I was a little slow. I was supposed to be showing these pictures. That's the mom looking like a man again.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I was like, maybe it's a man. It could be a man. Because that looks like a man.
Yeah.
So there's Sanford again going, oh, Aunt Louise. Oh, boy.
No, this poor kid.
So here we go. Poor kid. So this is Walter Collins. Yeah.
This is Walter Collins. So what happened with Walter Collins is his mother, let's go back a little bit earlier, maybe. This is his mother. She had to go to work, and so she gave him a dime or whatever it costs in old times to go see a movie in Los Angeles.
How old was he? Because he
was
pretty young. So
he was nine.
Yeah. His mom just threw him a nickel or a dime, and just said, all right, go see a movie, kid.
Yes. Yeah. And at this point, he is kidnapped, held captive, abused, raped horribly by Gordon Northcott. She does not report this for 1 week, which has been widely misreported because I think they wanted to make it seem like she was highly invested in the disappearance of her child. It wasn't a day, right? She comes home from work, he's gone.
Yeah, so what happened was the timeline is the 9th or 10th he leaves, and then she doesn't report it to the authorities for like 5 days, so like the 14th, 15th.
Right, she doesn't. Right.
So imagine that. Your 9-year-old son, you flip him a dime and say, go see a movie. And then like 3 days later, he's not home yet. And you're just he'll turn up.
Right. I guess we should go back a little bit. So he's held captive. He's abused, raped by Gordon. And the mother comes for a visit. She knows. And Sanford is like, go to the chicken coop. That's where Gordon is. And she discovers this kid and she's like, oh no, because the previous incident, it was the headless Mexican. Nobody's searching for this headless Mexican. She's not particularly concerned about it, but this kid, he's well-dressed. He's, you know, from downtown LA. She's like, someone's going to miss this kid. So they argue about it, she and Gordon, and then they decide.
Because he's still alive at this point. You got to remember.
He's still alive. He's in the chicken coop.
He's been tied up. He's been raped and abused for days. And so he's just in there bloody and just like a mess, barely alive. And so Sanford, having told her, thinking like, oh, this will crack that mannish veneer that, you know, that. Maybe there's some kind of womanly instinct inside of her that's going to hate the fact that there's a boy being tortured to death.
No,
not so much.
So her solution to this is that all three of them need to take turns hitting him with an axe until he's dead so that they share in the culpability and nobody rats each other out. So that is what they do.
Yeah, again, which makes total sense, right? You find out your son is raping a little boy to death in a chicken coop. Obvious, you know, solution to the problem. Let's all kill him with an axe together.
Of course, naturally.
And so that's what they do. They do go to the chicken coop, and while he's sitting there, basically almost incoherent, he's been tortured for days. He's tied up. The three of them line up, and one by one, they hit him with an axe until he is dead. They then reportedly drag his bloody body away, and they force Sanford to bury it on the property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's get back to Christine Collins, because this is the part of the story that, if you're familiar with this story, this is the part of the story that you'll know. So she was a telephone operator. She's been widely portrayed in media as an upstanding single mom who was doing well on her own. But she was actually a derelict mother married to a criminal who was imprisoned, I think at Folsom, for robbery. And so initially when she's talking to police, she's like, it's my husband's associates. It's something that has to do with this, which we'll talk about in a moment, but leads to a lot of confounding in the investigation. So what happens during this time period is the LAPD, they were dealing with a lot of flack from the media because they were wildly corrupt. They would beat people to extract confessions. They were detaining people illegally all the time. They were laundering money. You know, it was corrupt 1920s police stuff. And so they wanted to get a win, I think. Devin disagrees a little bit on this. This kid comes forth. Should we get to this yet or should we wait on this?
No, we can get to it.
Okay, so this kid comes forth. And he very closely matches the description of Walter Collins. And so the police contact Christine and they're like, we have found your son in DeKalb, Illinois. And she's like, how did he get to this place in Illinois? So she actually has to pay for the rail ticket to get this kid back to her. There's a big media circus at the train station. He gets off the train and she does recognize immediately that this is not her son. But pictures are taken, there's a celebration, and everybody seems to believe that it is her son. Now, the records that I evaluated, that I researched, said that there was really no evidence that people thought that this was her son. But you told me that the neighbors believed him to be the son.
So a couple things in the way it's portrayed a lot in like true crime type stuff. It's like kind of, as you said, that she's this, you know, this very doting single mom and she really wanted to find her kid and whatever. And I'm not saying she didn't want to find her kid, but she did seem kind of like a little bit, you know, first of all, not reporting your kid missing for days. That's a little stupid.
Where do you think he is for a week?
Right. And then let's get with the timeline here, too. You got to understand this is months and months later. So the kid went missing in, what was it, May, I think it was. Let me see here.
I think it was April.
March. So March 10th, he disappears. And in August is when this other kid shows up. Now, we already know, obviously, that he was, her son was raped and killed. This other kid, to make it a little, I guess, fair to the police department, that a lot of these movies have been made that like made them out to be these crazy psychos that just wanted to, you know, hush her up or whatever. This kid was a runaway and his mother had died. And so his father had remarried and he had left the home because he didn't want to live there anymore. And while he was at a diner, someone said, "Oh, you look like that missing kid." Because at this point, the Collins kid disappearance in LA had become national news. And he was like, "Oh, wow, what can I do?" And so he got it in his little kid brain that he could get a free trip to Hollywood and meet his favorite actor and maybe become famous if he pretended to be this kid. And so he pretended to be the kid. He you know, wasn't, the LAPD didn't like go find a kid that looked like him. This kid showed up by approaching the authorities locally in Illinois. And then they reached out to the LAPD and then they brought him in. And, the other thing is she does say that she knew immediately that it wasn't him, but there's a lot of photos of her hugging him. And sure, you could say those are staged for the press, but it just seems like, why would you pose for those photos if you were like, "This isn't my kid"? You know, like, wouldn't you be immediately like, "This is not my kid"? Well, hey, pose with the photo. Okay. Like, why would you do that? You know? Yeah, so this isn't the only photo. There's several photos of her like, "Oh, my kid." And the kid's playing into it. Like, he's acting like, "Oh, mom, yeah." And she gets home and the neighbors think it's the kid. There's other people who know of the family. I mean, I don't think they had a lot of close connections because, again, they sound kind of like they were not exactly, upstanding members of society. Her husband was in prison for robbery. She worked all the time. So they were kind of low class, but there were neighbors that were like, no, that's your kid. So it's not, it wasn't like just, you know, they gave some random kid to her and said, "This is your kid." But on the flip side of that, you know, as you've seen, right, like you've read other accounts, right, that kind of make it sound that way.
Yeah, I mean, I read accounts that she immediately was like, "I'm not taking this kid home." And she produced dental records and notes from teachers and other doctors to bring to the LAPD to be like, "This is not my child." He also was circumcised and her child was not circumcised. And he was 4 inches shorter.
Right.
Even though he was 12, he was 3 years older, 4 inches shorter.
Right. So it obviously wasn't his kid or a kid. And what the police did is they said, well, because she did say that eventually. She did say, "Well, it's not my kid." And the police said,
kid's got moxie.
Yeah. Just try. Can you imagine that? Just like, no, I'm your son.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But the cop said, "Well, bring him home anyway. Bring and try him out for a while." You know, see if it grows on you, see if it works out. You know, worst thing happens, you get a kid, right? Now, so she did that for a couple of weeks. And by the end of the couple of weeks was like, "This isn't my kid." As you said, got the dental records, got some teachers and some other people who knew the kid more than just like the random neighbors, right? And went to the cops and said, "This is not my kid. Yeah, you got to take this kid back."
Yeah. And the cops were like, no, this is your kid. And they came to believe that she was delusional. Now, the way that this is portrayed in the media is that she knew the entire time this was not her kid. But there is some evidence that she was entertaining delusions that it was her child. And so I think that it's probably true that the police really believed that she was delusional. So they institutionalized her in the LA psychiatric ward, held her involuntarily. And at which point, and this is also portrayed portrayed falsely in the media, at which point they decided she wasn't crazy and released her after 5 days.
Yeah, so how long in the movie is she locked up?
12 days, and then she has to undergo electroshock therapy, and then there's a psychiatrist there that tries to force her to sign some kind of exonerating affidavit for the LAPD. None of that happens. And they only let her go after there's a media circus and the fake son, admits that he lied about who he was. But that's not what happened here.
Yeah, what happened was she was put in the system. The system, of course, overwhelmed with crazies, as you can imagine, in L.A. There's going to be a lot of crazy people. And after, I think she was there 5 nights, she was evaluated and released because they said, well, she's not crazy.
Yeah.
And around that same time, the fake boy admitted that he was the fake boy. This is the...
It's like, I just wanted to meet this cowboy actor. His name was also not Billy Fields. He lied about that, too. Yeah, his name was like Arthur something.
So, there you go. So, that's the other thing that I think that even if, like, let's say... So, this is Jones. This is the guy that had her locked up. The thing before I found out that it wasn't even as bad as they were framing it, the thing I was thinking about was, well, first of all, if people have complaints about institutionalizing people against their will because of a situation like this, where they could just lock someone up because you're a problem. And that's kind of the way Hollywood has framed it. And I think for the very reason that they frame it that way, in every movie they make about institutions, because they don't want institutions to come back, because that's when all the crazy Jews start getting institutionalized. And so they every movie that you've ever seen about institutions, like, you know, like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or whatever, they're all like this, right? It's like, oh, they're just locking up normal people and making them crazy or whatever.
Yeah.
And the reason why when I first looked at this, I was like, well, look, first of all, let's be realistic. Anything that you do where you have power like this is going to be abused in certain instances. That doesn't mean you just take away the option to do something because it's occasionally abused. The other thing is it kind of would have backfired, because if Jones here, his whole idea was to lock her up to make the problem go away. Well, the problem didn't go away. It got a million times worse for him. And it's very similar to that case that's in the news right now, where you've got that that meme, that officer that they memed him as a Jew, and they put like the Star of David on his forehead. Have you seen that story?
Yeah.
And so that they locked... I don't know all the specifics of the case, because it just happened. I haven't looked into it much, but... They arrested someone for basically memeing a police officer as a Jew. And now that meme is everywhere. I saw yesterday there's an ammunition company, who follows me, by the way. I was surprised by that. Their official Twitter account follows me. And they posted that they're selling ammunition with that meme on the packaging for that ammunition.
It's got to be Phoenix ammunition.
Yeah, that's what it was. What it was. And so you've got, all these people now, because of the Streisand effect, right? Barbara Streisand, a Jew who wanted to shut down a cartoon of her as a robot. Or no, what was it? What was the, that's the South Park episode about it. What was the actual Streisand effect? I can't
even remember. I'll look it up.
Yeah, find out what was the original. It became such a meme. I don't even remember what
Streisand
the meme was.
Streisand effect originated in 2003 when Barbara Streisand sued photographer blah, 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 blah for $50 million to remove an aerial photo of her Malibu home.
Okay, that's what it was. Huh. And then, like, the what happened was the internet spread her that photo that no one would have noticed, right? Because it would have been, like, published in some, like, stupid, like, I'm Obsessed with Celebrities publication, and a handful of Spurgs would have seen it. But instead, the entire world saw it because they were like, well, what's so good about this photo? And a similar thing happened here where if he was trying to shut her down because, oh, she's inconvenient. And look, I don't know everything that was going on with the LAPD at that moment. From what I can tell, it looks like they had a lot of bad press and there was like a bad reputation. I mean, the LAPD seems to always have a bad reputation. So why not in 1928? And so if this was like yet another one of these stories and he was tired of it, and he wanted to shut it down, the exact opposite happened. She was released, obviously, after five nights, and she sued the LAPD, and it became a big story in and of itself because the some women's rights advocacy group got involved, and they started publishing all these stories. He ended up getting suspended. You know, so it really had the opposite effect of what they wanted anyway. So that's when I was first, you know, looking at this and wanted to think about, like, well, what is my answer to this? Because there are going to be these instances where people will, and like, if we were to reinstitute that, right? If we were to bring back locking people up against their will because they're nutcases. Yeah, sometimes you'd lock up someone that wasn't really a nutcase because it was the power that wanted to lock them up. But it doesn't matter. You think they don't do that already with prisons? It doesn't mean we get rid of prisons. You know what I mean? So it's that sort of a thing that I was thinking about. But then after reading through the stories, I mean, I'm kind of on the fence. I kind of feel like they might have genuinely thought she was crazy because she was kind of, you know, sounds like she wasn't like the most with it woman if she's not reporting her son missing for several days. She gets a little delusional later on. We'll talk a little bit more about that. You know, there were people telling them, no, this is the boy. The boy's telling you that. I mean, think about this. You're a cop, and there's this little boy telling you this. Like, are you going to be like, oh, he's making it up? Why would you think that, you know? Yeah. So, like, there's all these circumstances where if you're just, like, the cops trying to solve, like, genuinely trying to solve the problem, you might think like, oh, you know, this crazy bitch doesn't know what she's talking about. I mean, this kid wouldn't make this up. This is that'd be a crazy lie to, you know, to tell and to maintain for so long. But you know, but in the movie,
and there wasn't as much photographic evidence back in the day either.
Right.
And the passing apparently was very, very good. Like, he looked a lot like Walter.
Right. And so there were lots of people that thought that, no, it's just because you haven't seen him for a few months and you're kind of a weird lady. So maybe that's what's going on. So that, at least that, again, I don't know. There's no way to know, but it sounds like to me, Hollywood kind of took advantage of the fact that people hate cops and, you know, turned it into some crazy story about her being, you know, some strong, powerful woman being locked up by an evil man.
That's true. I mean, there are a lot of examples of unfair institutionalizations. So, you know, but that doesn't fly in the face of your argument because what did you say? We got to break a few eggs.
Yeah. If you're going to make an omelet, you know, you're going to crack a few eggs and that's just the way it is. It's like, you know, I'm sure if we had the death penalty as liberally applied as I would like it to be, we'd be killing innocent people from time to time. Worth it. Totally worth it because the amount
this
of people you're saving.
This is offensive to my female sensibilities.
No, it's because you're safe. Think of all the people, like, is it more offensive that occasionally you electrocute an innocent guy? Or is it more offensive that you are often beating to death innocent guys and women and children? Because that's what you're, that's the trade-off you're making.
It is a game of numbers. My concern about the institutionalization aspect is that if it is truly power within corrupt institutions, they'll just use it as a way to lock up anti-Semites. That's why putting people in institutions and killing them needs to be a vigilante job.
No, I think that see, here's the problem. Right now, obviously, you don't want state power when you have a state that opposes you. I wouldn't want that right now. I'd want to take over the country first, and then by imposing these kinds of rules, as we did, that's what we had before, and that would prevent or at least slow down the takeover of the country by your enemies, because
No, I agree. But by the 20s, L.A. was already chewed up to the hilt. So there is an argument to be made there that they were highly incentivized to institutionalize people that were innocent and to imprison them. So I see where you're coming from. I mostly agree.
Yeah, I just think that we need to gas all the tards. That's all I'm saying. So I'm just saying. I think that's the moral view. So
I'm all worried about my copyright strike, but I have Devin on. He's like, just gas the retards. It's fine.
Let's just do that. Let's just can we get rid of the? By the way, that's becoming more mainstream. Let's get rid of the undesirables. Like I did that stream Saturday where that was basically the theme: is we need to get rid of the undesirables and just like why have institutions when we have perfectly good. Mass graves is essentially the theme of Saturday. And sure enough, like literally a couple days later, we had, I guess on Monday, we had that Jewish judge let that black guy off because he was too crazy to know that he was killing a white person. And
the one in Seattle?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the one. And then who's that Catholic that works for Ben Shapiro, Matt...
Walsh?
Yeah, Matt Walsh tweets out that we need to just start euthanizing those kinds of people. And I'm like, yeah.
Finally.
It's getting more mainstream. It's spreading out. And then
a
couple other people.
Let out of the institution. I think in that article that I read about it said that for the immediate future, he'll be institutionalized. Like he killed somebody. I think he killed an Asian woman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many cases like that. Where they don't have, I mean, they get institutionalized and then they get, the problem is then they say they're cured. You know, like we covered a case on Saturday where this guy thought he had cameras in his eyeballs and that people were talking to him via radio. And look, this might all be true. I don't care if it is. In fact, it's he needs to go, especially if this is true. But then he executes some people on the freeway. He gets institutionalized. They put him on medicine. And he says, oh, yeah, well, the voices are gone now. And so a judge let him out, and he's well, I mean, this was from the 90s or so, so I don't know if he's still around. But he was, as far as I know, just able to walk free after shooting some guy in the head twice. And
it's incumbent on him to take his medication, and he obviously doesn't have the faculties to do that. So even if his medication cures him, he still has to be institutionalized at a minimum for life. He really should just be put out of his misery.
Well, yeah, there's no like what's the upside? What's the upshot of keeping him in an institutional? Like even let's say the medicine fixes him or what, you know, makes him not hear voices or think that there's no cameras in his eyeballs. What is the benefit to you? Why are you paying for that? Why are you paying to store that guy, put him on ice somewhere, like in some room with a bunch of coloring books? And, you know, like there's literally no upshot for me. There's no upshot for you. There's no upshot for him, you know? So let's just get rid of him. You know, that's all I'm saying. Let's just.
Okay. I can get on board with that.
Like, well, there's no reason to keep him. You know, yeah. Like why have a crazy person storage facility? And like you store things that you're going to need later. And we're never going to need that guy later. Like, we're never going to need him.
With the appeals process and death row as well. I mean, people are on death row for like 30 years. And they're appealing. The appeals process is more expensive. And death row is more expensive than life imprisonment. Did you know that?
Yeah. No. And we'll get into that too here in a minute. Because that's a recent change.
Yeah.
So that's the case that was popularized with the changeling. With Angelina Jolie, that's what a lot of people will focus on when they talk about this case. But unfortunately, the case didn't even stop there. So while that's all going on, meanwhile,
Sanford assists in the kidnapping of these brothers, Lewis and Nelson Winslow, age 12 and 10. They're walking home from a model yacht club. And they pull up and they see Gordon, and Sanford is in the car, and Sanford apparently looked younger than he actually was. He was 15 by this time, but he probably looked like he was about 12. So they felt safe getting into the car because he was like, I'm going to show you some chickens. And so they got in the car, and then they are imprisoned, raped for 10 days, tortured. And then Northcott, Gordon, murders him with an axe and forces Sanford, I think, to finish the job. And then they bury the bodies in the properties.
Right. And they came from a much wealthier family. They immediately, there was a lot of flyers that were put up. There was a reward that was put out. And this made Gordon nervous. And so he started writing letters sort of in the same way that he was forcing Sanford to write letters to his mother, claiming like, oh yeah, I'm having a great time at the chicken farm.
But really ridiculous claims. They said that, he said that they were going to go to Mexico to find gold or to find fame, like really outlandish, very, very strange claims.
Right. So it never, you know, the parents never thought that these were real letters. They were just like, what the fuck? They kept getting these weird, bizarre letters. But unfortunately, you know, they'd also been killed with an axe and buried on the property.
Yep.
Now, this happened around May of 1928. Mm-hmm. Now, in August of 1928, Sanford's sister decided that she was going to go down and check out.
Also manly.
Also kind of looks a little bit like a man. Maybe it's that family. Just has really bad genes. Just really.
It's terrible. Terrible genes.
That haircut is not doing her any favors.
What can you do with a face like that, though? I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, not that. I mean, not have like a Lego helmet on. I mean, what the hell is that?
I mean, it kind of offsets her strange lower facial features a little bit.
No, it just makes her head look like a bullet. It's just, I don't like that.
I don't like it.
There's something, it's like Uncanny Valley. It's like, I can't.
Yeah.
She doesn't look real to me.
Too bad, because she's the only hero of the story.
Yeah. Well.
She
with
gets
a face
very.
Like, with a face like that, that's the only pearl necklace she's ever going to be wearing.
Ew, oh, man. It's like I'm listening to JF stream again.
Oh, good Lord.
She becomes suspicious when she's reading her brother's letters. She's like, this doesn't sound like him. And so she decides to take it upon herself to pay her railway and take a several day trip to the chicken coop. So she goes immediately creeped out. She doesn't like the way she's being treated. Do they not know their cousin at all?
I mean, it kind of sounds like it. This is the mother. Was this the sister of the manly looking woman, or is it like, how are they related to the father or the mother? I couldn't, nothing said, nothing that
I'm pretty
I was
sure they're
up.
Related to the mother.
Okay. So this might be if it's the mother's sister, the mother is a psycho, obviously.
Yeah.
She's helping her son kill little boys with an axe and bury them. She's dressing her kid up like a woman and stuff. So if this is like her sister, crazy runs in the family. So maybe she just doesn't care, you know?
Yeah. And at that time, Sanford tells her about the abuse. He tells her about the murders as well. And so she gets the hell out of there. She tells immigration about her brother because he's Canadian. And then the LAPD at this point in time is notified.
Right. So the, her brother had been in the country illegally. So she thought like a good way to force the government to do, because this is back apparently when they cared about illegal immigrants. So she.
I thought you're from Canada. Get out.
Yeah. You're white. Get the fuck out of here. So they notified the LAPD. And by August 31st, which I guess is another contention, right? So that's the mom again with a fucking
that
bird.
It looks like a circus freak, like it a Barnum and yeah.
That's a man.
Yeah.
There's no way that's not a man. I mean, that looks like a serial killer man. You know, like, come on, guys. How is that not a man? But it's, who knows?
Well, maybe. She is a serial killer. So.
Yeah. So anyway, so they, immigration officers go to check out the chicken farm, the so-called chicken farm. And while they're, you know, when they show up, Gordon tells Sanford, stall them. I need to get away. And so Sanford stalls them for about 2 hours while Gordon runs away and hides in the tree line. Mm-hmm. After Sanford is sure that Gordon is missing, he says, well, I'll tell you everything if you promise to, you know, protect me. And they're like, well, what are you talking about? And that's when he lets them know, we've been raping and killing kids here. Mm-hmm. And my Uncle Gordon is just ran away and actually ran off to Canada with his crazy man-like mom. So that's what happened. The mother and the son both flee to Canada. And they are arrested in Canada, I believe, let's see here, in September. They're arrested in British Columbia around September 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And they are brought back to trial. And they start to check out the farm. They excavate the area, and they don't find, because what they did is they dug up the bodies and they smashed them up, and they burned them up, and they smashed them up again, and they kind of spread the ashes all over the place. They weren't able to find, like, identifiable. I mean, they found bones. They found bone fragments.
They found a lot of evidence, but they couldn't identify any of the children. So what they found was bloodstained axes covered in various human hair. They found blood-soaked mattresses. They found 51 body parts from male children, all bone fragments. So they found ankles, fingers, things like that, no skulls. They found the rifle, and then they found items linked to the victims, which is how they were able to do most of the identifying. It was Boy Scout badges, letters, whistles, and that's parents mostly had to identify the clothing of the children.
Or as you said, what do they do in the movie?
Yeah, and in the movie in Changelings, it's like the kid starts digging, and it's like a little pile of shoes. I was like, ha! They did the thing! They did it!
The pile of shoes. Always with the pile of shoes.
Yep.
So there's Sanford, who is cooperating with the authorities and tells them everything that they want to know. Here's the farm. Here's some of the clothing that they found.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of the clothing that they found. That's the mother, Louise, getting booked. Again, like a man. I mean, I'm like, she's even big,
she's
like a man.
She's tall, too. Yeah.
Look.
Yeah.
Look at that. I mean, maybe not like super tall, but like that's.
That's a big bitch. Yep.
I mean, look at that face.
Oof. Rough.
Anyway.
So, I'd kill kids, too, if I looked like that.
Yeah. So she goes to. I mean, basically what happens is. Let's see here. January to February, Northcott gets, there's a trial that goes on for 27 days. They find him guilty of all the crimes related to the murders and everything, except for one. The mother pleads guilty to the, was it the Collins kid?
She said that she was responsible for that. Yeah.
And they sentence Northcott, or Gordon Northcott, to die by hanging.
They put him in solitary confinement first, and then like immediate, it was like 2 weeks of solitary confinement, and then they hang him. They used to get down to business back then. Look at that crazy bastard. That's the face of a serial killer right there.
That's him on his way to San Quentin, I think.
Yeah.
And all these photos, there he is in court. In all these photos, he just looks like exactly who you, what you'd think he would look like. And you're like,
what
yep,
were they
that...
calling him in the newspapers? The old-timey newspapers?
The ape boy. They called him the ape boy because he acted like an ape, which is kind of funny. There's the Colin. That's Christine Collins. There he is again, looking like a psycho. There's his mother. There he is. So anyway, there is a, I thought, a really good play-by-play written at the on the day that he was executed, written in one of the I think it was the San Francisco Chronicle, written about how the execution went down. And it's interesting because in the last days, and you'll hear some of this, when he's being executed, Christine Collins, as you know, we kind of alluded to her being maybe a little bit delusional. She refused to believe that he had killed her son this whole time. She thought that he was still alive and that he had escaped, and that you know, Gordon would tell her what really happened, because she refused to believe that he was killed. And so she would go and visit him on death row. Well, not death row. They didn't really have death row back then, but at the prison.
That's awesome. They didn't even have death row. They're just like, you're just waiting to be executed imminently.
And like
regular
within, like,
holding cell. Yeah.
Literally within a month, like you're executed. And so, you got to free up space, right? So they, but she's visiting him in prison, and he's like jerking her around and like kind of telling stories like, oh yeah, maybe he's alive, and leading her on and basically mentally torturing her. The mother of the two boys also, because you know, Gordon was a big liar. Gordon would confess to like 10 murders, and then the next day say there were zero, and he was always hinting that maybe one of those, the two boys that they had killed, one of them had escaped. I forget mm-hmm. which one. I think the younger one, he said, actually got away. And so the other mother is also visiting him in prison, saying like, well, where is he? You know, where's the one that got away? And then he would just act like a complete asshole. He started saying his dad did the murders, that his mom did the murders, that Sanford did the murders, and he was just like all over the place, while at the same time always hamming it up for the cameras and trying to be like a star. He was enjoying the notoriety that he was getting out of it. And then he tried to do a fake suicide attempt right before they hung him. But anyway, this is, I thought it'd be fun to listen to it. I did an AI voiceover for the actual article written the day that he was executed. So let's have a little listen here.
Melodramatic to the last, and with a final confession branding his own father a murderer, Gordon Stewart Northcott played out the closing act of his sordid tragedy of life at San Quentin yesterday. 30 minutes before he went to death, he staged a melodramatic suicide attempt while Warden Holohan talked with him in the death cell. The attempt failed, and with blustering nonchalance, the condemned youth called for 2 soft-boiled eggs, which he ate with apparent relish. He broke at the final moment.
You would think he'd be tired of eggs. He had a chicken farm.
That's what he wants for his last meal. He's
like, your
probably
last
had
meals,
like 10,000 eggs. Yeah.
It's like, you can't think of anything else? I guess maybe it reminded him of rape. So that, you know, maybe that's why he did it.
Why every am time, I laughing? This is horrible. This is a
with
horrible story.
With every bite, I'm taken back to the good old rapey days.
Sapped of his last ounce of bravado by the hovering shadow of death, he went whimpering into eternity at 10:21 o'clock. The Riverside Chicken Ranch slayer collapsed as the death march began and had to be fortified with a stimulant for the ordeal. Blindfolded, he was...
They'll get more into
They gave him meth so that he would be aware when he got hanged. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, well, I don't know if it's meth specifically, but it was narcotics. They, because he kept, like, collapsing, and they'll get more into that here in a minute, because this the article, like, kind of summarizes it, and then it goes into detail. But the,
That's
but
so
yeah,
badass.
They did, because they were like, no, you're going to fucking be awake for this shit. So they slept him something.
He was supported up the fatal 13 steps to the noose by 6 stalwart guards who held him on the gallows trap. The trap was sprung at 10:09 o'clock, official time. 12 minutes later, Dr. Leo I. Stanley, prison physician, pronounced him dead. His neck was broken, Dr. Stanley said. While this swift drama of fate unfolded in the large, bare room above the prison shops, the two white-faced mothers, whose hearts have been torn asunder by the eight boys' brutal passions, sat tight-lipped within the strong gray walls, waiting the final curtain of the grim tragedy. They were Mrs. Nelson Winslow of Pomona and Mrs. Christine Collins of Los Angeles, mothers of three of Northcott's victims. To the last hour, almost, the young murderer tortured their mothers' hearts with the false hope that he would relent and tell them where the bodies of their children lie. He never did. Mrs. Collins believes her son Walter, 9, still lives. Less than 100 yards away, a third broken woman, Northcott's own mother, Mrs. Sarah Louise.
Woman, are we sure about that?
Look at that profile. That's even worse with it all blacked out.
Louise Northcott, serving a life sentence for complicity in his crimes, and upon whose failing shoulders he sought to place the entire blame, likewise awaited news of her son's death. Told at noon by matron Josephine Jackson that her son had been executed, Mrs. Northcott collapsed. She was carried, sobbing, to her cell in the women's wing of the prison. Up to the moment of his break, Northcott clung noisily to the braggadocio role he assumed upon his arrest more than a year ago. His last hour was a series of conflicting confessions and dramatics, and efforts to shift the blame of his quadruple murder to others. His last confession, handed to Warden Holohan 5 minutes before he died, accused his father, Cyrus G. Northcott, of slaying one of the four youth...
Yeah, that's the...
Dude,
that's
this
the dad.
Family has the worst genetics. They all have terrible physiognomy. They look dysgenic as hell.
Oh, like I said, the behavior is genetic. There are warning signs everywhere that these people should never breed.
Yeah.
See, this is what I'm telling you. See, all of a sudden, the giant pit full of burning crazy people sounds better by the second, doesn't it?
Youthful
yeah,
victims.
Devin.
Northcott Sr., a small, haggard man in somber gray, haunted the prison yard until the hour of execution, then left, returning immediately afterward. He emphatically denied the young murderer's charge. Gordon was insane and did not know what he was doing, he said. The suicide attempt hoax took place in the death cell a half hour before the execution. Boasting to Warden Holohan that he would still beat the game, he walked down the cell and turned with a melodramatic flourish. "I've done it, Warden. I've done it," he boasted loudly, and dashed a tiny glass vial upon the death cell floor. Holohan took no chances of Northcott making good his threat to cheat the noose. Dr. Stanley and Dr. F. E. Garfinkel, his assistant, were immediately summoned. They pumped out the stomach of the condemned man, but did not analyze the contents yesterday.
Yeah, so they pumped his stomach just to make sure he didn't commit suicide. They're like, "Nah, bitch, you're going to hang.
Yeah.
You're
going
to hang one way or another."
We used to have the stomach for these things.
Yeah, see, we used to have balls of steel.
Yeah.
And so when people are like, "Why can't we be like the old days?" Well, you got to start being, this is why. You know, yeah. In fact, I'll talk more about that here in a second.
No trace of a deadly draft was found in the small vial, they said. Holohan is convinced the suicide attempt was faked. Where Northcott obtained the small glass tube, which was less than an inch long and no larger than a lead pencil, Holohan did not know. Northcott had secreted it about his person, the warden said.
That means it was in his ass.
They had such a will with words back then.
He secreted it from his person.
But he had been thoroughly searched by the guards, who had dressed him from the skin out when they took him to the death cell Tuesday afternoon. Northcott awoke at 4 o'clock yesterday morning after a fitful night. Following his night interview with Mrs. Collins and Mrs. Winslow, he threw himself upon the three mattresses that comprised his bed and slept, his guards reported. From 4 to 7 o'clock, he roved about his cell, wrote a letter, and looked from his window as the golden California sunshine burst over the prison. At 7, he asked for his spiritual advisor, Harry Nugent, Los Angeles revivalist. He repeated his declaration of innocence and prayed with Nugent. At 8:30, he asked for Warden Holohan. The warden remained with him an hour, listening to his swiftly changing stories and accusations. He gave Holohan a number of letters scrawled on prison paper and the fly leaves of a Bible. By 9:30, the 140 guests who attended the execution were waiting inside the inner wall to be conducted to the gallows room. Shortly before 10 o'clock, the solemn procession started by heavily armed guards, started across the Garden Beautiful and down the runway to the red brick shop building, on the third floor of which is the execution chamber.
We need a gallows room.
Yeah, totally.
We need more gallows rooms.
Weren't we talking about this on the stream? Was this last week where the visible execution is meaningful for public morale?
Right.
None of this lethal injection shit. Gallows. Like that. I mean, gallow room. I like
it. Well, even this, like, it was too private for me. I mean, 140 people came. Wouldn't you show up? If you got an invite to the Gordon Norcott's hanging, would you show up?
Hell yeah.
See, I'm telling you, we should pay-per-view this shit. It would make so much money. Pay for gallows rooms all over the place.
The prison was silent as a tomb. Apart from the slow-moving procession, there was not a man in sight. All prisoners, with the exception of those employed outside the walls and in the stock mill, had been herded to the stockade at 8:40 o'clock to be held under heavy guard until after the hanging. Warden Holohan was determined to have no catcalls and hissing from the inmates, such as occurred at the execution of William Hickman 2 years ago.
Of course, good old William Hickman. I actually never looked up who William Hickman was. I was kind of curious, like, what did he do? Yeah, look up 1928 William, because he would have been hung in, or did he say 2 years ago? Hold on, let me play it again.
From the inmates, such as occurred at the execution of William Hickman 2 years ago.
1926.
He murdered a little girl.
Well, then why? Yeah. I guess it's more civilized to not have the catcalls, but I mean, I kind of like the catcalls. Wouldn't you rather them have to walk by like a procession of prisoners? They're like, oh, you're going to die, bitch. Oh, you're going, oh, you're going to die. Like, I don't know. I don't care if it's a little undignified. I kind of like it.
Quietly, the witnesses filed into the execution chamber and waited, tense-faced. Behind the double doors at the foot of the gallows stairs, Northcott was being prepared for the last act of his sordid tragedy. Fearing he would break, Warden Holohan took a long black board to which he was to be strapped in case of emergency.
So they got this big board. If he kept collapsing and they couldn't hold him up, they were going to just hang him while he was strapped to a board.
they were really into this. They're like, this is going to happen. You're not going to stop it.
You're not going to drink your little ass poison that you came up with. You know, you're not going to get out of this. We're going to drug you up. Make sure. The only thing they did give him the blindfold.
I don't want that. Northcott gasped. It wasn't a blindfold, please, he whispered hollowly. Nugent bound a white handkerchief across his eyes.
Fucking Nugent.
It was the first time in the history of San Quentin a man has been blindfolded at execution. Please don't. Please. God is with you, Gordon, came the deep tones of Nugent, the revivalist. Say a prayer for him out loud, Mr. Nugent, the warden urged. Say a prayer for me, please. Let not your heart be troubled, the revivalist chanted from the 14th chapter of St. John. Yeah, the death march began. Oh, don't do it. Please don't do it, Northcott broke suddenly, wilting in the arms of the guards. A stimulant was hastily administered. Warden Holohan said it was whiskey. One of the guards was overheard to say, we had to snow him up. Snow is vernacular for narcotics.
They had to snow him up a bit. So yeah, it could have been like a methamphetamine, but they basically gave him narcotics so he'd stay awake for it.
The double doors swung open. Nugent, chanting his Bible verse, led the way. As Northcott's feet struck the first of the fatal 13 steps, he stumbled. With six guards gripping his wilted body, he was hurried up the steps. Oh, don't do it, please. Oh, God. The eyes of the 140 spectators were stony hard. There was no sympathy for Northcott in a single face.
And that is why they had nice things.
Yeah.
You have to have those stony looks and zero sympathy.
Yep.
In my father's house are many mansions, droned the preacher's voice. The rope's too tight. Oh, God, please don't. The hangman's arms flashed up. Behind the dull wood screen, three convicts slashed with their knives. One of them cut the slender cord that held Gordon Stewart Northcott to this earth. The trap flashed back. was caught by two black steel spring brackets and held fast.
Wait, they had
Gordon
comics
Stewart
to it?
Northcott hung at the...
Yeah.
that is awesome.
Yeah, that way, you know, no one had to feel like that they'd killed someone or something, I guess. But yeah, that'd probably be a job it'd be easy to get volunteers for, you know?
Yeah.
You go to a prison. Hey, who wants to cut the rope that kills the boy rapist, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, also that they had probably already killed before, so they're like, you're going to hell anyway. Everybody was religious. So just kill this guy. It's fine. You'll get some free time. You'll get some yard time.
And Gordon Stewart Northcott hung at the end of a hempen rope, his black death cap tilted at a rakish angle. A guard sprang forward and held his body still.
Now, the reason he had to do that, they don't really say this in so many words in the article, is it kind of, it's described as a botched execution. I call it a successful execution because he's dead.
Yeah.
Right? So clearly it worked. But it didn't kill him instantly. He actually sat there jiggling around for about 12 minutes until he finally died of suffocation. And so that's why the guards reached out and held him still, because they're fucking based.
I was reading about this, and somebody was like, yeah, they 13 minutes of hanging, and then finally he had to be killed through strangulation. And in my mind, they're pulling him down, and then they're just strangling him manually.
No,
that's not what happened.
No, they're holding his body down, making sure he, you know.
The cords of his hands stood out. Warden turns gray. And still, the eyes of the 140 witnesses were stony hard. Warden Holohan, standing within the roped enclosure about the gallows, turned suddenly ashen gray. His face was deeply lined. Dr. Stanley stepped forward with professional air and mounted a three-step ladder. He ripped open Northcott's shirt and placed a stethoscope against his heart. Dr. Garfinkel stepped forward and took his pulse, watch in hand. A murmur of voices, hard, unsympathetic, rippled over the watchers.
Hard, unsympathetic. See, you guys noticing a theme here? Steely eyes, hard, unsympathetic, as they watched him die for 12 minutes. 12 minutes of just steely-eyed gaze. Yeah. That's what people need to be prepared to do. While Dr. Garfinkel is like, he's dead, guys. we got another dead goy.
Watches ticked suddenly, like clocks on a Sunday afternoon. Dr. Garfinkel looked at Warden Holohan and nodded. Dr. Stanley stepped down from the ladder. The trap was sprung at 10:09. He died at 10:21, the warden said. The big black iron door clanged open, and the 140 men who had witnessed the 8 boy pay the price for his brutal murders filed slowly from the room.
The 8 boy.
8 boy, yeah.
Good old 8 boy.
Out through the printing shop they went, past the plain black box with its funereal cover slow and black handles that held Northcott's body. Down the 75 steps from the shops and into the clean sunshine. As they passed Condemned Row, 9 pairs of burning eyes flamed at them from the narrow slits in the steel cell doors.
It was called Condemned Row, which is even better and more based than Death Row, by the way.
Yeah.
Those are the guys just, by the way, they're not in there for 40 fucking years. They're like knowing they're going to be there next weekend.
Yeah, one in, one out.
Yeah.
More men awaiting death as those cells, but not one of them was the cold-blooded murderer Northcott was, according to Warden Holohan. Northcott was the worst man I ever saw, the haggard-faced warden said. He lied from start to finish. He tried to make things as hard for everybody as he could. In the prison yard, the slayer's drooping father watched the witnesses file from the inner gate. That melting procession told him his son was dead. Gordon never had a square deal, the father declared. Told of his son's last-minute accusation of himself, the little man went pale.
Yeah, he's like, Gordon never had a square deal. Well, he said you killed the boys. What?
Then his face flamed angrily. He left the prison immediately, not waiting for the undertaker to assume charge of his son's body. The body was given over to the exclusive custody of the father, Warden Holohan said. There was no autopsy, according to the warden. The 8 boy had expressly forbidden it, and Northcott Sr. announced his wishes would be carried out. The father declined to say when or where the funeral would be held, but it was said at the prison the simple rites were conducted by the Burt Curry Undertaking Company in Richmond, with cremation yesterday afternoon. In Warden Holohan's home, Mrs. Collins and Mrs. Winslow, who had hoped to learn the place their children are buried, awaited Northcott's final word. Mrs. Winslow, a frail little woman, kept running to the big window and looking the prison shop building where the execution was taking place. She could only guess at the stark drama being enacted there. "I know my sons are dead," she sighed wearily. "I never hope to see them again." Mrs. Collins steadfastly refused to believe her son is dead. When the final word from Northcott was taken to her, with no definite statement of her son's whereabouts, her face lighted up with hope. "Northcott's stories have so varied, I can't believe him," she cried. "I still have hopes. If I can get any definite proof my son is gone, I would be reconciled to his loss. He has been gone so long now. But until his body is found, I'll cling to hope." Officials have no expectations hope will ever be answered. Northcott, they are convinced, killed her son. But where he hid the little body is a secret he carried through the gallows trap with him.
And that's the article. But that's also kind of shows you that she's a little unstable. Like, oh, no, he's still alive. And it's like,
yeah, I'm sympathetic to that position, though. You want to hold out hope. You know, I've spent so much time listening to true crime and watching true crime. When somebody goes missing, families hold out hope always. They always hold out because it's just easier than facing the reality of the situation that you're in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but so here's my thing though with that. I feel like people always do this. Well, you don't, you know, you've never had to suffer the loss of a child. You wouldn't understand. And it's like, I'm not an idiot. I can kind of, I mean, sure, I'll never understand. Just like I'll never know what it's like to be black. You know, it's like I get it, right? But I can kind of imagine. And like I remember, so like actually just the other day, someone tweeted out a video of those little dolls. They're like fake babies they give that they sell. Yeah. And the now there's a lot of pedophiles buying those fake babies, but one of the stated purpose of these fake babies, these hyper realistic baby dolls, is that it's good for like when a mother loses her baby, she gets the fake baby and carries it around like a psycho.
How could that possibly be good for her?
Right. And I'm like, what? But anyway, someone posted the video and they said, well, I don't want to judge people that use it for that purpose. And I'm like, no, judge them. That's the problem. Like, if you have some woman dragging a stuffed baby around because her baby's dead, there's something horribly wrong with that person. That's not like that's okay to judge. You can judge that. You know, just because bad things happen to people doesn't mean you can't judge them. Which we'll get into in a moment too when it comes to Sanford. So what happened with the that obviously Gordon was hung until dead. What happened with his mother was, oops, that's not the right one. Where is it? Well, that is kind of funny. The mother is where is she? There she is. She was given life in prison. And the reason, well, only reason why they gave her life in prison is they didn't give women the death penalty. And they put Sanford into a...
like a reform school.
Right, but for like less than 2 years.
Yeah.
So even though he admitted to killing one of the boys with an axe...
He killed two of the boys, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, so the whole thing was, it was the same argument. Well, you don't know what it's like. Don't blame the victims. You don't know what it was like to be raped by your uncle repeatedly with a broomstick. And it's like, yeah, I thank God I don't. But also, that's not like just like a free pass to do whatever the fuck you want. You don't get to, you were raped in the ass with a broomstick? Well, then murder all the kids you want. You know, you were forced to do it. And, but that's how they treat it.
Also, he was 15. He wasn't 7. You know?
Right.
He was 15. He was 14 when he went to the farm. That is adult enough for him to not have assisted in putting other boys that are much younger than he is, half his age, in his place. And from certain accounts, you know, he could hear the rapings and the murderings. And he talked a little bit to the police officer about how a lot of it was just relief that it wasn't him. It's like there's a time where you have to in your life. Well, hopefully none of us come to this. Situation or situation like this where you have to just be like, I would rather die than do something like that.
Well, and you would think that if anything, he would be able to relate to the agony they were going through, mm-hmm. and that, you know, better than anyone else. And he should be able to be motivated to stop it because of that. Like, oh, I don't want the thing that happened to me to happen to this other person. Not thank God it's them and not me.
Right.
You know, so,
and guess what he was allowed to do? He was allowed to grow up, get married, and then he adopted two sons.
Right. So it's just kind of like, what are we even doing here?
Yeah.
You know, this guy was, you know, sure, obviously he went through a lot, but so do most people. You know, maybe not to that extreme. Maybe that's on the extreme end. But I think because of the same, you know, mindset of any, you know, well, you don't know what it's like. You know what it's like to lose a kid. You can carry a dead baby around and it's fine. It's like, nah, it's not though, actually. And we can judge people that suffer horrible experiences. And so that, anyway, you had that going on. The other thing is, there was, let's see here. Here we go. I like how they reported this. Torture suspect lived like a girl. Alleged coast fiend played with dolls. And that was about Gordon. So the headline is talking about how the murderous Gordon, that was a psychotic thing to do as a little boy, to be playing with dolls and to dress like a girl. And that, you know, obviously might have explained some of the behavior. And so you had this article where let's see here. Oh, this is in the same article, but we'll get to that in a second. Talk about how he was raised by his mother like a girl and had, you know, made to wear dresses until he was a teenager and this sort of a thing. And that was recognized as an actual sign that something horrible was going to happen in that guy's future. And again, this is something that kind of gets whitewashed. They don't really talk about this aspect of the case very much in the modern tellings of this. So there's that. The other thing that's interesting is, in addition to the mom not having to get the death penalty because she's a woman, there also were no women allowed to serve on the jury because they thought the case was too extreme for women.
I mean, it was gruesome, but, you know, there were a lot of concessions made to women. Not having to do jury duty in a trial like this, thanks. Thank you a lot. And then the mom didn't get the death penalty, although she certainly deserved it.
Right. Well, and she was paroled after only 12 years. So she didn't do life in prison. She was out in 12 years. She got out in 1940 and died shortly after, died in like 1944. But just the idea that, you know, she was allowed to be a burden on the rest of the people of California financially and otherwise for, you know, 12 years. I mean, why did we need her?
You know,
we should have just gotten rid of her. The other thing is the execution timeline. We've talked about that a little bit. You know, you're talking about how there are people that have committed like triple homicides in the 90s. And they're still fighting in the courts. And in California, in fact, we covered that one case on the Insomnia stream a couple of weeks back of the Indian guy that killed a cop. And mm-hmm. now he's loose. He's out in San Francisco. But part of the reason why his court battle went on for so long, in California now, if you commit murder, and you get, well, now no one's getting the fucking death penalty in California. But I think beginning in the 1990s, it might have been even the 80s, late 80s, they changed it to where it automatically appeals. So if you get the death penalty, it automatically starts this, like, decades-long appeals process. So, like, whether you want it to or not, like, it's they do it because, well, Jews, really, made sure that legislation was passed. And so none of these people get executed. Like, I don't think California's executed anyone since like 2006.
It's been that long.
Yeah, I think so. It's in California. It's been a long time. And it's not that there haven't been people sentenced to death, you know, although I don't think that, I think these days there's probably not a lot of people in California getting sentenced to death. So did you look up the California thing?
Which one?
The last time someone was.
Oh.
Oh, that's we don't. I mean, it's not a big deal, but.
I mean, I want to know.
I thought if I
2006, you're right.
There you go. See. So.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, for 20 years they haven't executed, and like it's California, like if anyone needs killing, you know, it's yeah. people in California, you know. So they haven't killed anyone in fucking 20 years, and it's just bizarre. The other thing I found here was the, you know, talking about, you know, the genetic aspect of things. Oh, no, this isn't what I thought it was. But this, so this, one thing we didn't mention, what the reason why, another reason they moved to California was Gordon got into trouble in Canada for molesting a boy in 1925.
Right. And the parents for sure knew about this. He was, yes. He was much older. He was an older teenager, and he became sexually obsessed with this kid who I think was like 11 or so, hanging out with him all the time. The parents weren't asking any questions about this age gap. He was raping this kid all the time. But also it sounded like he was in love with him. And the parents were just not asking any questions. Eventually it was found out and they were like, we need to skip town. And that's when they moved to LA.
Right. So this, in the article, it says, the Northcotts, who had amassed, enough money from their Canadian farm to establish themselves in New California by another Canadian family, the Scotts, in the summer of 1925, Stuart Gordon Northcott's predilections first brought himself and his family into trouble. Northcott was arrested on a complaint sworn to by the parents of Philip Scott, 10. He was 10, it looks like. Stuart Northcott escaped serious difficulty this time because the law concluded there was not enough behind the charges to prosecute. Evidently, Gordon Northcott and his mother became frightened because the mother was protecting him, and they persuaded the gray-haired father, who they always portray as like this useless schmuck, to pay out cash and buy a chicken farm for the son. Quote, instead of getting better, the father said, things got worse. So that was
what did they expect of him? Why else would he want to have this remote farm? It wasn't for the money. It wasn't a highly profitable venture. It's a disgusting job.
Yeah, let's build you this like rape dungeon,
right,
in the middle of the desert, so that you stop raping little boys.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect to it. And then, yeah, I mean is there something you wanted to add?
I was going to do this whole spiel about outlaws taking down the LAPD, but that's not at all what happened, which changes the entire trajectory of my analysis and really questions the theme of the show. They actually didn't get anything done. LA, I think the chief resigned or he was on administrative leave or something for a few months. Nothing really happened. Sweeping reforms to the LAPD didn't even happen until the 50s. Also, she sued for... Did we talk about this? I don't think so.
Yeah, talking about Christine Collins.
Yeah. Christine Collins sued for $50,000. She got $10,000. They never paid her out. It would be about $340,000 today. But I think that there is more legitimacy to the claims than people want to admit, that she was, in fact, insane. Fine,
yeah,
Devin.
I mean, maybe not like she should have been locked up, right? But I'm not saying that like she was insane enough to lock up. I don't think she should have been locked up. But I'm saying from the cop's perspective, I could see why they would have, because you have the boy going saying, "No, I'm her son," and you've got you've got the neighbors saying, "No, that's her son," and she's kind of weird and has this criminal husband that's in prison, and she didn't report the kid missing for a while, and she took the kid home even if she was initially reluctant, and we don't know 100% the facts of that. So I mean, you could see a situation where the cops are just like, "Oh, this crazy bitch, you know, let's just get rid of her." But
in Changelings, they talk about Section 12, which is the police code that allows you to be committed without a warrant. And in that movie, it's all hookers and stuff. And I'm kind of like,
yeah,
that sounds fine to me.
Yeah, no, it's one of these things where, you know, if someone commits a crime that is that I can't, because there are some crimes when people commit crimes where I think a reasonable person can relate to it on some level, even if they've never been put on, like, in a situation where they might not even do that. You know, morally, they might disagree with what happened, but they can understand how maybe a weaker person or, you know, someone who's not, you know, maybe someone who's salvageable might have still done something like
right.
that. Like, not
right,
a big
right.
deal. But then there's these crimes where they're so obscene that no reasonable person under any circumstances would have ever committed those crimes. And I feel like regardless of severity in those instances, those people should be removed permanently
yeah.
from the
yep.
gene pool.
Absolutely.
If you commit a crime that is so outside the norm that a reasonable person can't even like put themselves in your shoes, then you don't belong in that society. Because by keeping people like that in your society, you're propagating those genes. So even if that, like, let's say you prevent those, like, let's say you get them for being felons, they become felons, and now they can't vote because they're felons, they can't serve on juries because they're felons. Well, guess what? They're going to have kids, and their kids, maybe they aren't going to commit felonies, maybe they are, there's no way to really know, but those genes are now in the gene pool, and they're voting, and they're having more kids, and they are serving on juries, and maybe they're going to law school. And maybe, you know what I mean? Like,
I think that maybe we don't need to murder these people, but we should explore the forced sterilization angle. Anybody that's had an abortion, immediately forced sterilization with abortion procedure. You get arrested for prostitution, forced sterilization. I think we need to murder them.
I think we need to murder them. I mean, it depends on what it is, but because it's like, well, all right, we sterilize them, but we still, keep them in institutions and pay for them to live out their sterile lives forever? That's still ridiculous. Like, what's the
point of
that?
I'm trying to find a way where I don't have to put everyone in the pit. I'm just not ready yet, emotionally.
No, we need to put people in the roof hole. We need to have a gigantic roof hole where people are fed into it. There needs, like, a conveyor belt. I'm telling you, there needs to be industrialized roofing for like at least a few years to take care of this problem at this point, because it's just been run amok.
Yeah.
And the second we let women be like, oh, but my feels, the roof hole sounds mean. See, that's when we stop having roof holes.
Yeah.
And then the problem explodes. And
listen, we don't have the stomach for it. As base as I am, I'm still resisting you.
Yeah. I just think that, we just need industrialized, thinning of the herd, some hardcore eugenics going on.
Right, right. I mean, we've allowed this dysgenic behavior to be propagated through things like IVF, and then all these freaks are finding each other too, procreating. It's just a disaster.
Yeah, and it's not to bring it back to bees, but I'm going to bring it to bees for a second. So it reminds me of, like, some of the strongest bee genetics that exist right now are called Buckfast bees. They're from Buckfast Abbey in England. And the story behind the Buckfast bee is that because of globalization, a lot of bee diseases from Asia and other places began to sweep through Europe and really affect the European bees that were not immune. They didn't have an immune system that was able to handle these kinds of diseases. And there was like this perfect storm of like bad weather and diseases and stuff that were wiping out bees. And the thing, but because of that, at Buckfast Abbey, you had this father, I forget his name off the top of my head, but you had this beekeeping monk basically at Buckfast Abbey, who saved the bees that actually survived, like, this, you know, total culling of the population. And he started propagating the good genes of these bees. And now these bees are, like, expensive. They're, like, $150 for a single bug. You know, imagine paying $150 for an insect. And that's if you can get one. And it's because genetics matter. They matter so much. And that's what we need to do. We'll come back so much stronger. Even if we get, you know, we have to whittle it down to like a couple of hives, you know, eventually we'll take over the world like the Buckfast bees.
That's just what I don't want to come to this conclusion.
That's what has to happen. It has to happen. All right. So I guess with that.
Yeah, really. Send your super chats to my channel. Send your, what are they called on Rumble? Rumble rants. That's gay.
Rumble rants. And
I don't like it. Send your Rumble rants to Devin's channel.
And then on Entropy, we've got, I don't know what they're called. Entropy chats. All right. So let's go to the Entropy. Do you want to go to Entropy chats first or?
Sure.
All right. We got a really generous Entropy chat from Herp Derp. Herp Derp, thank you very much for that very generous donation. And Herp Derp says, longtime listener and all that jazz. You know, I've noticed the people who give the most, like, say the least.
That's true, yeah.
There's definitely...
We have some changes coming up next week because we're changing the time slot to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. But another change that we will be instituting, do not blame Mr. Devin Stack, is that we will only be reading chats $10 and up. Now, the reason that I'm doing this, I did this on my last show, is to cut down showtime. And because I want to give the same amount of value. Like I see a lot of people donating $1 five times, and then they're all discussions that we could have a 20-minute discussion on. So I feel like these need to be valued just also for the listener, for people that are giving more money. So if this bothers you, just don't donate for a few weeks and then send a donation after like 3 weeks if you're sending $3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Seven,
no, it makes sense. I mean, there's people that I get it. Like I just suffer through it on the insomnia stream, but I get it. There are people that they kind of abuse the system. They'll nickel and they'll give you like 10 paragraphs with, you know, a dollar a piece.
Right.
And you're kind of like, all right, well, you know, there's the guy that gave $30 and he said like one thing, and then you gave.
I don't want to do the Stephen Molyneux thing of like berating somebody that gives, because I'm glad for any donation. I'm grateful for any donation that's given to me. But I think it's kind of abusive to other listeners to do that. So sorry, guys.
All right. Then we got Ford Enthusiast who says, let's pour one out for Peter who screeches all night. And that's a reference to last Insomnia stream where we had... one of the crazy people that was let out of the institution was described. And then there's Peter, who screeches all night. And it's like, why do we need Peter who screeches all night? Can we get rid of him? Are you okay with that, Rebecca? Can we put Peter who screeches all night into the roof hole?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, can you imagine?
Just stay in the roof hole? Do we have to start the building on fire?
Well, I think they're going to want to once you put Peter in there. Okay. He screeches all night. The other people in the roof hole are going to be like, all right, burn us. We can't take this.
We can't take it anymore.
Peter has made it intolerable. All right. Then going over to Rumble. Let's see here. Scroll. All right. We got a generous donation from Likes to Watch who says, continuing to pay what I owe for the backlog of great material from both of you.
Hope Thank you
both
so much.
Are doing well. So there's Likes to Watch. Well, thank you very much, Likes to Watch. I'm glad
Bummer,
you like to
I
watch.
I just lost half of my YouTube catalog in one day.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, but what's good about it is that people generally don't go back to watch topical streams about past content. So there wasn't all the value of it has already been juiced out. So I kind of feel okay about it, but still.
It wasn't like evergreen content with more. Got it. Well, there you go. Silver lining, I guess. Then we got TMK1335 says, blonde epic collab idea. You, Devin, and Mike Stoklasa? I don't know.
No way. Oh, my God. I would lose it. Do you watch Red Letter Media, Devin?
I have no idea what that is or who Mike Stoklasa is.
you must watch Red Letter Media. They are these movie reviewers, and they are so funny. And I love Mike, and I know that he's an ugly fat man, but it's just peak male. He's just peak man right there, Mike. If I got to do a stream with Devin and Mike, I think I would just be so grateful. Is that Churro?
Yeah, he's
meow.
He's I put a box near him, and he has just used it, and the fragrance of Churro is wafting through the air right now.
Ew.
Yeah, it's not great. So, anyway, that's what ketamine smells like on the way out. Anyway,
oh,
he says, team up for a 13-hour live review of Europa the Last Battle. I bet he'd be down for it. I like to think Mike is secretly based.
Well, I like to think that too. Every once in a while, he'll give me a wink and a nod. And I did investigate it thoroughly, and he is not Jewish, although Jay might be Jewish. Jay is also 5'3". So.
Not who Jay is, but
you gotta watch Red Letter Media.
Sounds Jewish if he's 5'3". All right, then we got Trufflebee with a generous donation. Says, "Keep up the good work. Get well soon, Churro."
Thank you.
Well, he's up and he's walking around. So that's
peeing all over his ketamine pee, just spraying it all over Devin's.
Oh, house. I didn't say it was pee.
Oh. Are you just in a room with like wafting ketamine cat shit?
Well, kind of, because I put him in here with me, obviously, and then I put a box really close by so he wouldn't have to hobble very far, you know.
Oh, and the sacrifices we make for our kitties.
Yeah. All right, then we got Richard 1387 says, "Devin, you raised a good point in the previous stream about people not liking the police just because they got caught with weed that one time when they were 16. They hate cops for shitty lumpenprol reasons. We hate them for cool nationalist ones. We are not the same. Thanks for the show, folks."
I still hate cops because of busting 16-year-olds. It's just a lame misallocation of resources. It's like, you know, get the black criminal. Just stop arresting white kids doing dumb shit.
Well, if they were doing that, and I'll tell you what, as a white kid that did dumb shit when I was younger, I lived in an area where there was lots of non-white kids doing much more violent shit. And I'll tell you, cops let me off a couple times.
Me too.
Because they were just like, "You're just doing what now? You're just driving this car that you own, the title's in your name. You're just driving through the desert and running over shit and smashing it up and shooting bottle rockets off. Okay, whatever, dude. You're not murdering anyone, so go on." You know, I had lots of times where like cops were cool to me because I wasn't a dick to them, and I wasn't, you know, wasn't their actual problem.
Yeah, and I feel like that's what they've been cool.
And I feel like that's how it was probably even when before the Great Negro Migration and before like
the demographic. Trust.
Yeah, like cops would be like, "All right, little Billy, if you get into more trouble, I'm gonna tell your mom." And yeah, little Billy wouldn't play with matches anymore.
Yeah, one time after college, I was at a Halloween party and one of my male friends drove me home and he got pulled over and he blew a .08, which is the legal cutoff.
Oh.
And the cop was like, "I don't want you to have to get a DUI, so I'm just going to follow you home. And it's fine. Just don't do this again."
Something identical to that pretty much happened. I wasn't driving. I was in the passenger seat, but my friend and I were driving back home. We were like two blocks away from our house, pulled over. He was like, "All right, you guys are drunk, but how much further you got to go?" And he's like, really, like literally right there. And he's like, "All right, I'm going to follow you." He's like, "Okay." And he followed us to my parents' house and drove away. And that was
it. Yeah.
So
every once in a while you get away with something.
Good old fashioned white privilege, the way it should be. All right, then we got the Supreme Rabbi Satan says, "Blonde, which part of Missouri were you from? Why did you leave? Would you go back? What are the pros and cons of Missouri Rhineland?"
Okay, so I was from St. Louis, but I lived in West County, so it was the white area. Why did I leave? There's no industry there, and also I don't know. It's like old money and insular, and I hate the weather there. But the riffraff from St. Louis came into West County. There was like a fatal shooting from a black kid at the Chesterfield Mall a few years ago. And they did inner city busing in my high school, which I've talked about a lot. And the city is now filled with Jews and Indians. So no, under no circumstances am I going back to St. Louis. Like, I haven't even been back to visit in like 15 years or something. No. That's why I left. I guess Missouri has some good spots. You've got some family still in Missouri, right?
Yeah, not in the good spots though. Well, I mean, in the rural spots, I guess. So kind of good.
The weather is just ass there. And so many black people.
Absolutely. All right. Then we got Reinhardt 1488 says, just want to second the idea of a marathon or multi-part view of Europa, the Last Battle.
Love it.
Well, didn't they just redo it?
Did they?
I thought they redid it and like made it shorter or something like that. Someone did.
Oh.
I don't know. I haven't seen the new one. Because the first one apparently has some like some factual errors with it. So they wanted to redo it to fix that so that people weren't, you know, using that to, you know, attack the whole thing. And compress it so that you didn't have to be some spurg that watched it for 13 hours. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll look into that after the show. All right, then we got Real Starfish Prime says, Mr. Stack, last Insomnia stream premiered far too late for us East Coasters to donate before the show started. Thank you for your attention to this matter. You're talking about starting the entropy earlier. That just means I'm working on it up until like the last second. Probably the same with this show. I didn't have like the thumbnail done until we were like 15 minutes till we were live. So, churro kind of, I was going to work a lot more on the show yesterday, but instead I was driving 300 miles with a dying cat. So, you know, it is what it is. Then we got Real Starfish Prime again says, really love the design layout of the show. Looks like the monitors were moved slightly from the last show to more of a main screen. No, they're the same. Oh, you want to see the... Actually, that's what we should do. Go back to this. Pa-ta! There we go. No, nothing's changed. Both of you keep up the great work. Wife also likes the show.
Ah, cool. Thank you. Well,
appreciate that. Then we got Super Daphne with a very generous dono. All right. And she says, we love the new show. So, you have anything to say to Super Daphne?
No, I love my mom. I tweeted at her the other day, and she was so pissed. She's like, I'm supposed to be anonymous. So, I call her. She's all pissed off. And she's like, I have 12 followers now. So, I was like, oh, I deleted my tweet. I forgot that I had done this before to her, and she was really pissed. My mom is a hyper introvert. Like the most introverted person, putting her on blast is like the worst possible thing for her. But we do appreciate your support, Mom. I love you.
And I can relate to the introvert thing for sure.
All right. Really?
Oh yeah, big time. You wouldn't think. I've done lots of public speaking. I've been in lots of roles where you have to do it. But like if I've ever had to do like a real big, like I've had to go to like conferences where I do a public speaking thing. And then like I'm having to like talk to people all day long. And then like when it's over, most people, they go hit the bar. I go back to my room and just like, I'm like, away from the people, away from.
Yeah, that is the test of extroversion and introversion. Do other people give you energy or do they deplete your energy? Like when I'm coming home from a party, I just feel like I'm on drugs. I'm on cloud nine from like all that social interaction and talking to everybody. And my mom doesn't understand me. She's like, the tyranny of extroverts has destroyed my life.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not like, it's not like, yeah, I'm not like over the top and I'm much better nowadays, but yeah, I can, I enjoy not being around people a lot.
No. The problem with extroverts is they always treat introversion like it's a problem that needs to be fixed, But it's really not. I mean, introverts are more introspective, and I think that they're a little more careful about the things that they say. Extroverts, we're the ones that have major personality defects.
Well, you said it, not me. All right. Then we got Cage Bishinjaro says, gassing was a common term bandied around the 1940s, and guess who capitalized on that term and made an entire narrative about it? Well, I don't know.
Is it Jews?
I think it might, maybe. I think he might be talking about Jews. Then we got Tom O'Hawk says, got here way too late, so I think I'll just watch the replay. I'm sure it'll be great. A great show, as always. Oh, and Dave is a dick.
Yes, he is.
Well, there you go. We got Flankvert says, my name is pronounced Flanker VT. Well, I like Flank.
Did you just have a stroke, buddy? So,
I mean, that's how you have to say a name that's spelled like that. Flanker VT, huh? Flanker VT, I just wanted to say Dirt Meat. It's still one of the best historical films I've ever seen. Looking forward to buying a t-shirt when it's available. There is a Dirt Meat shirt that's been available for months. Or if that's what you're talking about. We'll get the Outlaws ones done. I'll set up a store this week or before the next show. I'll set up a merch store and we'll have like a Rueful shirt or something in there at least. Maybe. So we'll get some stuff. We'll get it. I just haven't had a chance. But thank you there, Flanker. All right. Then we got White X Pilled says, just showing some support for two of the best around. Well, I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Then we got Evan626 says, please look into the institutionalization of George Lincoln Rockwell. My understanding is that some Jews said his anti-Semitism meant he was insane. He was nearly injected with a brain-killing drug. My understanding is they brought him in and then they let him out because they concluded he was not insane.
Really? No. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, they tried to institutionalize him for the anti-Semitism, and then they realized he was, like, smart and cool, and they let him out.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, people are always worried about that, and it's like, that's the argument for everything when it comes to using power. If we use this power, then they'll use it against us. And it's like, stop. Just stop with that. People need to stop with that and realize that, yeah, it's not going to be perfect. There's going to be problems with it, but there'd be a hell of a lot fewer of those people that want to use it against you around if we'd gas their fucking grandma when she started carrying around like a stuffed baby because her baby died. You know what I mean? And so, like, that's what we got to do is get rid of people like that. And then they're not in charge of anything ever. All right. Then we got Mr. Smalls 14 says, yes, ma'am. Okay. Hopefully that's not directed at me. Then we got Mojack says, we need a RL running man when it's an PPV and bet on the stalkers.
We need a real life running man situation that we put on pay-per-view.
Oh, see, I don't know. I'm not familiar with those acronyms there.
I like it.
Yeah. See, that's another reason why Hollywood tried to make that so over the top. So we wouldn't get any good ideas.
Yeah, really.
Then we got Evan626 again says, that's the same one. Or wait. No. It's a different one, but about the same topic. Pretty sure I learned about the George Lincoln Rockwell institutionalization from a chapter in one of his books, either White Power or This Time, This World. I heard him talk about it briefly, and he talked about it like it was a joke. He's like, yeah, they tried to institutionalize me. And then I talked to the doctor for a few minutes, and he was like, You're the most sane person here, and let me go. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but like, that's basically what he was saying. Then we got Ray Fleck says, thanks for all of your efforts over the years. Both of you keep up the great work.
We are old timers, man.
Yeah. Been around a long time.
Seen so many people come and go. 10 years now. How about you?
Well, I've been in politics in media my whole life, but not, I would say I kind of got based around 2016. So yeah, 10 years now. Fuck, I didn't think about it, but yeah, 10 years.
It used to be so much fun.
It's still fun. It's just, you know, because you got to remember, I got blackpilled probably before most people. I got blackpilled like the first day of Trump's administration when he said the Clintons were good people. Yeah. And everyone's slowly caught up at this point. Some of them trying to take credit for it. That's fine. Yeah, I mean, so for me, some of it gets boring a little bit sometimes just because I feel like I've been saying this for 10 years, dude. Like,
no, I'm not bored, but it was like the Wild West. You could just wake up. I remember sometimes just waking up and I'd have a video that had 500,000 views.
Well, that's only because, I would say the suppression algorithm type stuff that does take some of the wind out of your sails. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, same thing, because I would clock in 500,000 views on videos on a regular basis. And now that'll never happen. And obviously you could have your stuff on Amazon.com. I got banned from Amazon with my book. You could have, an actual, you could have normal platforms and stuff. And yeah, but that it didn't last very long, you know? So I enjoyed it for like the year or two. I feel like that's about all it was.
Yeah.
Before it got cracked down.
But 2016 and 2017, that was when it was the most fun.
Yeah, back before we knew how Jewish Trump was. That's the biggest black pill.
I don't know. I was figuring it out back then.
Yeah. Anyway.
I had some really anti-Semitic mentors.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, the earlier you figure that out, the better. Because it really is the key that unlocks everything else.
It's painful, though. It's painful, man.
All right, then we got Cage Mushinjaro says, those 12 minutes of hanging are nothing to what he did to those boys. Exactly.
Of course, yeah.
I would have been okay with 12 days of hanging.
My sympathies don't extend to this guy.
No, and nor should they to any guy. Any guy that is weird enough to go in the hole, you know, he's... Do you really want more people standing in line in front of you in places?
Good Lord, that's what academic agent said to me. And I was like, and then I gave this whole spiel about how the world's not actually overpopulated. It's just too few white people. So is the question, is your question, do I want more brown people standing in front of me in line? Because I can get on board with what you're saying.
No, obviously. Well, just think of it this way. If we're getting rid of undesirables, I felt like that was implied. That includes... Okay. You know, like, yeah, it involves racial hygiene, but if you're going to be hygienic, I mean, there's some races where, like, the whole thing's got to go, right?
Yeah.
You know. So, anyway. Yeah, the white herd would get thinned, but not as severely as, I think, the others. And, look, they'd just be removed, I think, anyway. Really what I'm talking about is a whites-only society performing racial hygiene. We don't have to do the racial hygiene thing until we, you know. But yeah, we should be thinking about it.
Dysgenic whites are last.
Not last, because they'd get in the way of getting rid of the others. But they certainly are not as. I feel like this would be the order. Dysgenic. Well, Jews first of all, and then blacks, and then dysgenic everybody else. And then dysgenic whites.
Yeah. What about Indians, though?
Well, I said Jews and blacks, and they're kind of like a mix of the two, so... Right? So that kind of takes care of that. All right, then we got Ghost Dog Man says, crazy theory here. Didn't we have high tea back in the day, which resulted in stronger, uglier women and men, but Hollyweird wanted softer, effeminate females, or effema females, he says. So pumped all the oil with estrogen mimickers. Or pumped all society with... I mean, I don't know. I think that
male testosterone was much higher. But now that I'm looking... I was going to say female testosterone wasn't higher. But now that I'm looking it up, it actually was.
Yeah, it was probably higher. But I don't think it was high enough to make, like, you know, this monstrosity. This is just horrifying. That's not normal.
No.
Yeah, like, this is not normal. Let me see if I can find a better picture of her. Or by better, I mean
Do you know
worse.
What causes high testosterone in men?
What's that?
Smoking.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like this...
Don't start smoking.
Yeah, I don't think that... That's not... Mm-mm. Yeah, that wasn't normal at any point in time.
What is she wearing? What is going on there?
Well, she's holding a chicken.
Oh, it looked like... Okay, I'm kind of far away from the screen, but it looks like she's wearing...
Like some kind of dress.
Like a chest armor with feathers on it.
No, she's holding a chicken.
Oh, okay. That makes way more sense.
That's one of the rape chickens. So.
Oh, God.
All right, so then we got TMK1335 says Ape Boy can get in the roof hole. See? TMK1335 is on board.
All right. So, yeah,
little by little.
I can be persuaded.
Then we got Purple Catmint says, hey, Rebecca, what was up with your neighbor banging on your door last stream? Yeah, what was up?
Oh, that was so bizarre. So after the stream, I went to the house where I saw he pulled in the driveway. And some old woman, she was all like, whoa, what are you doing? Who are you? I was like, I'm your neighbor. She wouldn't pull down the top of her screen. I was like, I'm your neighbor. It's fine. But I was just wondering if you have this kind of car. And she's like, no, we don't have it. And then she goes, oh, you know what? The Merry Maid man that we had coming over was late and he was driving that kind of car. And he said he went to the wrong house. I was like, oh. I just assumed that somebody was here to murder me, but really it was just a lost maid. I'm paranoid. I need to stop.
Well, and they could have been there to murder you because the maid is always the one that did it.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't know. That was kind of a weird clue joke or something, isn't it?
That was pretty good.
Or Cluedo, as the British call it. You know they call it Cluedo? Yeah, they call it Cluedo. It's so gay.
Why?
Yeah. Yeah. The first time I was talking to some British person, they said Cluedo, and I'm like, what the fuck's Cluedo? And they're all, you know, Cluedo. You know the game? I'm like, Cluedo? No, that's just, what is that? One of these, like, you know, like the jolly fashy jammers or what? You guys have all these stupid names for everything. It's the periwinkle patuku. And they're just like, the what? You know, they just make shit up, it seems like. So Cluedo, I don't know why they wouldn't call it. Why'd they change that? Because they change things that are so weird that they would change. Cause it's not like, I mean, it's an American thing. We made it. We called it Clue.
Like why?
Why would you need to add a dough at the end of it?
That makes me disproportionately furious. I don't know why, but that fills me with rage and it makes me furious.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I don't get it. It'd be like if they called it McDonald's O or something like that. It's like, what's the point of it? So anyway, SpyGuy89 says, no matter what time the show is on, count me in. Well, there you go.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you.
Thank you very much there, Spy Guy. We'll see you probably at 5 then next week. Is that what we're doing? 5 next week?
Pacific Standard Time, yeah.
All right, 5. 5 it is.
I will be at a different location because I'm going to see my nieces and nephews next week. So
we'll,
I hope that time slot works out.
Can you do the thing? Can you still do it? Okay. All right. So we got Cage Mushinjuro says, the entire world will be a roof hole soon. Well, possibly.
I hope not.
All right. Then we got Evergreen Dream says, was having a hectic day at work and missed the stream. We'll catch the replay. We'll appreciate that. Hello to Evergreen Dream in the future. Evan626 says the reason the death penalty is so onerous today is actually because white Gentiles desperately want to kill the scum in our society. The onerous measures are in place to defeat some Jews, and we all pitched in to make this dono in honor of the dearly departed retarded faggot. Oh, wait, nope. That's part. I thought that was part two, and it was actually just some other guy saying that part.
This poor guy is like, I didn't say that.
it flowed together too. All right, that was Ghost Dog Man. Right, the second part of his thing was, and a black in the 1970s, the death penalty was declared by SCOTUS to be unconstitutional and abolished across the country. The reasoning put forth by several Jews and first black on SCOTUS was that so this is one of those dollar donos where he keeps going and going. Just so you know, Evan 626.
Sorry, buddy.
This is the last time you're going to be able to do this. Was that if you administered arbitrary and too often to abuse by biased prosecutors and other such dastardly white Gentiles, the good people who used to be in the state legislature got to work thinking of ways to defeat arbitrariness and abusive rationales to be allowed.
This is turning me into Stephen Molyneux, okay?
I know. To reinstate the death penalty, and he keeps going with it. Almost, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm actually going to not. You. There's three more after that. There's three more. I'm going to see if your last one gets to the point. I'm going to go all the way down to your last one. Your last one has dot, dot, dot after it, like you're still typing.
Don't send any more donations. Stop.
All right, I get it. Yes, Jews did the death penalty. Or stop that. All right, sorry, Evan. This is literally, you are the reason for the rules. You're the one that ruined it for everybody else. All right?
RuPaul.
All right, Ghost Dog Man says, we all pitched in to make this donut in order, or in, obviously, there in honor go. Of Retarded Faggot. All right, then we got, after I go through all the ones from that, from Evan, we got Book Track Grooves says, Blonde, how do we send you stories? Davon, when is the fundraiser for the new horse for Davon? For the new horse?
Devon? Davon? Well, so,
sometimes they call me Davon because when I was on InfoWars, Alex Jones called me Davon. Davon, he thought I was black. I'm 100% convinced, because it was called Black Pilled, and he was just like Black Pilled, and he had never talked to me before. So like, now we got from Black Pilled, we got Davon Stack. And then I'm like, eh, it's how's it going? I'm the whitest guy sounding guy ever, you know.
I know he's a spurgy controlled opposition, but. I just have a special place in my heart for him because of the nostalgia of watching InfoWars in like 2016, 2017.
Yeah, it was entertaining.
It was entertaining, yes.
And then, or what was he saying though? What was the question? We got distracted by the Davon part. Oh, how do they send you stories?
I don't just send, we're in contact on Twitter. Just keep sending me messages on Twitter.
There you go.
Stop calling me though.
And I don't know what you mean by the horse thing.
He's really into horses.
Okay, I don't have a horse. And I don't think I'll get a horse. It's too much work. I have bees. I can only be responsible for so many species. I'm taking like cats to the fucking hospital. Got bees. I mean, I can't have horses too.
Okay, that's just cats and bees. All right.
That's a lot.
I have cats and dogs. Does that mean we're the same?
Well, wait till you get bees.
I am getting bees.
Yeah, you'll realize bees are actually more work than the cat and the dog. They're
really?
Fun. Well, you can ignore them, and they just won't be as fun. But if
my
you do,
daughter is so excited, and we can open up our streams by talking about our bees.
There you go, and I can give you
people
bee
are gonna
advice.
Hate that. They're gonna
nah, people will get bees.
That. Yeah,
I can start selling killer bees, like mailing killer bees to the mail. Wow, that'd be so horrific. I kind of want to do it now. All right. Then we got Cage Mission Jaro says, ever done an Africa audio stream? Yes, I have. I don't remember. It might actually be called just Africa Audio Edition. Amren.com just dropped a great podcast about it and just wondered if you'd done an insomnia stream on it. Yeah. Almost positive. And it might be called Audio Edition or something like that. And then we got... Oh, I finally got to the last one of Evan's. It was a different color, Evan, because his last one was $2. All right. So, Evan, let me see if you sum it up. Let's see here. Is living document that we have evolved beyond death penalty, even though it was definitively thought to be a legit punishment when the document was written. Thanks for the control. Yeah. No, yeah, we get that's we understand, like, basically through legally navigating the legal system, Jews have eroded punishments across the board, not just the death penalty, and have, as you said, watered down the Constitution by saying it's infinitely changeable. All right, then we got Reinhard, 1488, says, we can solve the female squeamishness problem somewhat just by making executions quick and relatively painless, bullet to the brain or lethal injection, etc., or by making them wear a Pokemon outfit as we throw them in the roof hole. I added that last part at the end. I don't know.
No, you know what would really help women? By turning it into a really posh social event.
Ah.
Yeah.
And then put totally. Like by posh, do you mean like, are we talking, you know, like Hunger Games looking stuff, or are we talking
But what if we could all wear little hats?
With like.
And have those little British like tea sandwiches and crustless sandwiches with cucumbers on them and like stackable trays, you know.
So like a really ornate gallows.
Like tea party gallows. Women would so be into that. You can just have a nice little, you can have your little signature cocktail for the person getting murdered and getting executed, and then we can all just sit there with our little hats.
Is there a fancy way to kill someone?
I think guillotine's got a lot of class, but you might get sprayed.
No, but I mean like seriously, is there like a fancy way? Like a way that just like it's almost like lavish. That would be the draw. Like, well, ooh, wow, fancy.
Okay, let's think about that. Let's brainstorm. I like where your head is, Devin.
Like a femininely fancy. Not like, you know, because for a guy, fancy is like you strap him to like a rocket and shoot him at the moon or something like that. I mean like something that women would get into where they'd be like, oh,
well,
I really...
women are really into poisoning.
Oh, you know what? Here's what you do. So you mix the poison like a mixologist.
Into the signature cocktail?
Yeah, you have like some guy, you have a fancy bar with all these different like chemicals behind him, but they're in really fancy jars and they have like all these little spice, you know, containers like girls like, you know, like you're going to like the herb store to get your Cherokee hair tampons, you know, like just like make it look really, have crystals everywhere. And
can we have that round ice?
You can have whatever you want. We'll have the round ice, and we can have some like midget with a tuxedo and he'll do tricks as he mixes the deadly mixture together, right? And then he'll pump it into some kind of machine that executes the guy who is wearing something designed by Coach.
Okay, no, that you're not a gay man, but that's okay.
Does that work? Something like that?
Okay, let's go like Dolce and Gabbana.
Okay, there you go.
Okay. I'm into it. Yeah, can we have like a smoke feature on the ground?
Well, the smoke coming out of him when he's being electrocuted, I would think, would kind of work, right?
I still think that we should poison him with the signature cocktail.
Why not?
But a midget can make it. All right.
Or how about this? Yeah. Women like to decide things too. So why don't we just let them vote? That's the one time you let women vote. Is how they die.
Okay.
So they can show up with their little hats, and then have like a, you know, like America's Got Talent kind of things. They got little buttons under their seats or whatever.
Yeah.
And or give them an app, I guess, because it's not the 80s anymore.
Ooh, an app, a little QR code.
Right. And
women
you can
love
vote.
QR codes at restaurants.
And they can vote, like, and they can rate. They can rate the ways, well, we used poison last week, and
okay.
I was not pleased with the way Jorge twitched when he was dying. And
exactly.
So,
and we can all live stream it and then talk about the live stream, like when people used to live stream Real Housewives and talk about it on Twitter.
There you go.
This is brilliant. And then we can have a tasting menu after, and it's all desserts.
All desserts. There you go. All right. I think we solved the problem, Reinhardt. Let's see here. Then we got Evergreen Dream says, I think Cluedo is a pun on Clue and Ludo. Ludo is similar to Parcheesi. Whatever.
It just
dude.
Makes me hate the British.
I don't know what the fuck Ludo is either. Is that something else you guys made up? Is that something that was American and called Lou and you guys called it Ludo?
Bastards.
I don't know. All right, then we got Uncle, you know, the one thing that bothers me more than Cluedo is we had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the ninja part was too violent for them. And so they changed it to, like, teenage, like, fun time Ninja Turtles or something like that. Like, there's...
Mutant part was too violent for them?
No, the ninja part was.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't even understand. Like in America in the 80s, everything was ninjas. Did you guys not have any ninjas? Like, in the 80s?
And
that was too much.
The ninjas went the way of the gun in the UK.
Let's see here. They were called Teenage Hero Turtles. Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
That is so gay.
Oh, it's so gay. So gay. All right. Then we got Uncle Vinny says, look up virilization and congenital adrenal hyperplasia. I can't say stuff.
Yeah, maybe that woman did have CAH.
Fetus is exposed to excess androgens.
Androgens, yeah.
Jews have higher genetic tendencies up to 500%. Likely female example, Andrea Dworkin, and dozens of, and then it just says, that's it. Cuts off there.
Brittany, who is that big bitch that was imprisoned in Russia? The NBA, WNBA player. Brittany Griner.
Yeah.
She has CAH.
Are we even sure that's a woman?
For real. Have you seen that picture of her with her shirt off?
Looks like a dude.
Yeah.
All right. Then we got Real Starfish Prime says, way off topic, but Steve-O was on GRE and said he hasn't watched porn in over a decade. Not much was discussed about it, but nice to see it brought up. Nice to see it brought up on such a huge podcast.
That is nice.
I don't know. Who's Steve-O?
Is he talking about Steve-O?
What, from Jackass?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. Then we got, let's see here. Cage Mushin Jaro says, the Brits like to appear homely or boring so they can add words, etc. AA used the words lo-fi to describe his style this week.
I love AA.
Well, lo-fi's not that crazy.
No.
Of a word.
No.
Then we got back on, and then I'll pass it back to you, back on Entropy, we got Fubar Nation says, YouTube chat needs a mod. So there you go.
Okay.
And then the man himself says, great job as usual. How are you sure the pit solution is not derived from sadism? How can we make sure it wouldn't devolve into that?
It's a slippery.
No, I don't think it's slippery. I feel like it's...
No, that's a slippery slope argument.
Right. Yeah, I feel like that's the thing, is you can apply that to everything. Like, that's... It's like you just do what's necessary, you know? It's kind of like saying, well, if we put this guy in prison, then we'll start putting little kids in prison. And it's like, no, you don't, you kill rapists. Like, what's that? What slippery slope is that leading to? You know, you're going to kill rapists and enjoy it. Oh no, I'm okay with that kind of sadism.
I have mods in here. I Winter in the Forest is a mod, and then I mod. Dave's wife was in here earlier, and I was messaging her. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Get out. What are you doing here? My family's praying for you. I just want you to know. I know. Are you good over there?
Yeah, Entropy logged me out because that's what it likes to do midstream.
Okay, I'll do some supers. Propaganda, no note. Thank you. Scribble Saga, also no note. Thank you. Jacob Winkleman. Going through LP stuff, do you remember the James Fishback v. Destiny Jubilee clip, Devin? It was the last clip in the stream right after Trump's election. Fishback was Israel first last year. That guy, I had him on the Backlash, and I'm like, this guy is sus, and I don't exactly know why, but I think his physiognomy is Jewy. And I don't like anybody attaching themselves to the America First thing. This is just another problem with America First.
I've seen people talk about him looking like a Jew, but I don't know.
There are no base politicians. Let's get real.
Yeah.
LeChant says, that kind of loving turns a man into a slave. That kind of loving sends a man right to his grave. I go crazy. Having JF sing me Aerosmith was the highlight of my week, month, and year. That was the best dream I've ever seen in my entire life. I've never felt better about myself. I was horrified and mesmerized. Thank you, JF. He asked if I want to be a part of his harem. So I asked my husband, and my husband said, it's okay as long as he can get an 18-year-old Brazilian au pair. So I might just be moving to Canada. I don't know.
There you go, JF.
Jacob Winkleman. Also, it would be cool to get Emily Yukis and Devin Stack crossover with you in the cuck chair on one of these Outlaws episodes. I know you have the juice to pull that off. I could pull that off, but I can't have somebody better looking and more based on my show. It's just too undermining to my sense of self. I don't think I can do it. I love Emily, though. She's great.
I'd like to see so I thought I saw a tweet the other day saying that they were shutting down Sora, and I'm pretty sure that's what she uses for her animation. I wonder if...
Oh, no!
I mean, there's plenty of...
She'll find another way.
Yeah, there's other stuff she could use, but I was wondering how that was going to affect her workflow.
Oh, she'll figure it out. She always does. Big A, have either of you looked into or heard much about the phenomenon of organ donees taking on the personality traits of their donors? I have. I think that it is bullshit. I think that it's coincidental, and there's basically no way to conduct a clean study on this.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, because their DNA is in you, but yeah. It's also you're taking medicine constantly to prevent your body from rejecting it, and that DNA is not, you know, going to your brain. But I don't know, maybe something else that we don't understand that could be happening? I mean, I guess it's possible,
maybe.
But I don't see the evidence for it.
And no, we're talking about genetically inherited traits. Like, I don't think that your personality is housed in your pancreas or something.
Right.
This is just too pseudoscientific for me. I'm Matt Bell. Hi, Rebecca. I'm sure I've heard of this Canadian freak before. Wasn't he related to the Quebecois Guelpier family? Come on. Michael Ellis, buy the cat a chocolate mouse or something. Isn't chocolate also fatal for cats, not just dogs?
I think so. Cats seem to only be able to eat meat, and that's about it.
Oh, yeah. My cat loves popcorn. Isn't that weird?
Is there butter on it?
No.
Salt?
Yeah.
Might be the salt.
Oh, she just goes crazy. She'll stick her little face in a bag of popcorn and just go crazy. What a weirdo. Vulcan Phoenix, here's some coffee money. Thank you both for all that you do. Devin is a legend, and Rebecca is beautiful and based. Great combo. Thank you so much. Ryan White, awesome show. Great job. Mental illness is rampant today, partially because these mutts were left to breed. What role do you think TV and movies have played in modern mental dysfunction? Well, I don't think it has much to do with mental health, although people with antisocial personalities tend to have more non-social outlets, which is probably compounding the mental health issues. Also, being propagandized for those people that don't have good reality testing already is disruptive to their ability to decide what is true and what is not true. And I think that we see a lot of this in Antifa and in leftists. They already have poor reality testing, and then people are giving them reasons to amplify their pre-existing mental health issues.
Well, and AI is just exacerbating that across the board. Everyone thinking everything's fake now. So
yeah.
it's that's going to make people crazier.
Oh, totally. Big Mad Lad Blonde, if things ever go south with your hubby, Jean-Francois Guelpier is very interested, even posthumously. Yes, I know. He the mummy part. He's like, I've gone too far. She is still naive to the mummy portion of this stream. Captain Base, no note. Thank you, sir. Destined to be different, no note. Also, thank you, Big Mad Lad. Are we going to do weekly shows with Cam, too? I love the new shows, too. They're so much better without Fuentes. Simp Dave, thank you so much. Yes, weekly on The Reset with Cameron. We are doing another installment tomorrow, and we will be switching our time slot to Thursdays. Thank you. Please join us then. tomorrow on my YouTube channel, on my new YouTube channel, although remarkably I was able to live stream this on my YouTube channel today. So I wonder if that copyright strike is going to go away. Funning in circles, Blonde, don't let people mislabel Data in Star Trek TNG episode 322. Which one is that? The greedy alien wears a hat, mistreats Wells, and gives plastic surgery, and Data does the cooking. Which episode is this? I just rewatched season 3. Star Trek season 3 episode.
And you call me a nerd ever?
I've been to 2 Star Trek. The most toys. Yeah, it is that sniveling Jew on that episode. That's an excellent episode. I've been to 2 conventions. We're actually called Trekkers, not Trekkies.
Ah.
Thank you for that. Yes, I love Star Trek The Next Generation. Don't ruin it for me, Devin. Don't do it. Don't do it. I know you want to.
I'm going to.
Floppy disk energy 69. You forgot Arabs and North Africans in your racial hierarchy breakdown. That's true. Also, what is with the hate for Filipinos? Low crime rate, high productivity, mostly doctors and nurses and warm people. I don't hate Filipinos.
It's their little hands. Fine.
They're so small. They're so small and brown.
I don't like their little hands. It creeps me out.
Yeah. No, I don't hate Filipinos. They're just not white. They shouldn't be here. Destined to be Different says, hi, thank you. Maui County GIS said, Devin is one of the best. He is the best. Number one. Destined to be Different also said, what made you choose the chicken coop murder story? Well, my brother called me because he watched Changelings. He's like, you're not going to believe this story because I'm really into true crime. And then I started researching and I'm like, this is the craziest shit I've ever heard. Because Changelings is actually centered around the Christine Collins story. And I'm a mom of girls. And like the idea that somebody could just switch out my kid and expect me not to notice was just so preposterous that I was like, there must be more to the story. And there was. Matt Bell says, hi, Devin. Was the pale siren girl based on Rebecca? Can you get Rebecca to wear a diving mask next Wednesday? I'm kind of into it.
No, it was just
generic blonde.
No, actually, the way it started was the prompt that created the music when I was making the music video. The prompt was just like '90s punk rock girl, you know, whatever, and it made some blonde with pigtails, and I was like, all right, well, that's what she looks like now, and so, you know, and then the latex bodysuit stuff. It was just I was going cyberpunk with it, you know, with the. Yeah. And it just, I felt like, well, it's good because it's like a robot band. So she looks kind of like a, you know, robot in a way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're good over here.
Okay. Well, I think we're good. Let me just double check Rumble. We got a couple more here, or one more at least. Reinhardt says, have either of you guys ever done a stream on Liberia and why it failed? Maybe we need a status update on Wakanda. Now, that'd be a good one.
That would be a good one, yeah.
Because it does have an identical constitution to the United States, and it shows you what blacks are capable of doing on their own.
Which is nothing. JT has talked about it extensively, though.
There you go. Well, yeah, that's it, guys. Do you have anything else?
No, thank you guys so much for joining us. We will see you next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We are Outlaws. I'm Rebecca Hargraves. Find me on X at blondes_tweets. Check me out with Cameron tomorrow on my YouTube channel, on my new YouTube channel, which is at Rebecca Hargraves 1 for The Reset. Devin?
All right. Well, and you guys can check out the Insomnia stream every Saturday at 10 o'clock Pacific time, at night, 10 o'clock Pacific time. And we go over lots of crazy shit that is, I guess, appropriate for late nights on Saturdays. And you can follow me on Twitter at black_pilled, and if you can't remember where to go, you can go to blackpilled.com. It'll take you to my Odyssey channel for the Insomnia stream. And other than that, yeah, make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 5 o'clock, and I guess that's it.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.